Blog Talk Radio.
Gideon!
Please see how he treats and falls boxes and traits as an unadulterated.
Come, we tell them this time
I'm right. He's asking for it.
Every time.
And you should never know. You should know.
Everything that I have said. I've seen many situations. I had to avoid their illusion. Now getting caught in their confusion. Escaping this mental invasion. I've seen many situations. I had to avoid their illusion. Their confusion, lest a man escape this invasion. It seems as if you're right, so why should I fight? Just to prove a point at this time. I see that there is pride behind all this fight. Cause I first should see what's wrong from what's right. Yeah. And it is so hard to express my feelings. Oh Lord, about the misconceptions of my teachers. Can't you see the prophecies revealing? Oh Lord, forget.
Oh, yes.
Oh Lord, help us now that segregation is rising.
Rising,
rising.
Well, man, I be reap of them soul. Oh,
man, I be reap of them soul.
Ambitious mind, elevating soul. Ambitious mind, evil seed in my soul. Frustration turns most friends into foe. Working day and night trying to overthrow. To counsel together, plot against a brother. Robbing a barrel, who is the vice of a
hero.
Lasting make the wicked case a turn rock flow.
Oh, the wicked case a turn rock flow. It seems as if you're right, so why should I fight? Just to prove a point at this time. See that there is pride behind all this fight. Cause I first should see what's wrong from what's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems so hard to express my feelings.
Oh
yeah, oh yeah. About the misconceptions of my teachers. Oh boy, boy. Yeah, can't you see prophecies revealing?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh Lord, help us now that segregation is rising.
It's rising,
rising.
When something learn them and teach, they know we are no rich. Ignorance of the fool, yes, yes, no one speak. Oh, eating the people, them are straight out of seat. Everyone feed themselves, first place on a seagull. Eat on the glory, the earth to the meek. Hey, hey, if I laugh, I weak. Harvest time, how when them are going to reap. You think the judge are dead, but see my life on a seagull.
Yeah.
We all got to reap what we sow. Man, I be reap what we sow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man, I be a
say.
You know it's Penthouse Gideon music once again.
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here at Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I have my guest from the National Solidarity Committee. He's going to tell you about what's going on. We're going to discuss some of the things that's happened this past week. So, you know, I didn't like that whole thing about the Martin Luther King March, and that was a bunch of bullshit to me. Still disturbing. So, but I did think that one thing I think it accomplished was a little bit of recognizing some problems. But still, after 50 years, all y'all doing is marching for more jobs. You're just wasting fucking time. So, groups like the National Solidarity Committee, I got the brother on the line. I want him to go ahead and explain what their mission, their role is. And we're going to give it a lot more time than we did in the last couple of weeks because we had them on and they didn't get much time. So without talking any further, brother, you there?
Yes, sir. Yo, Father Peter, brother, what's going on? I don't know if my comrade came in yet or not, but he might be coming in real soon and shortly. Brother Shakur L.
That's good. That's good. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead and give a brief on what, on who you are and what the National Solidarity Committee is.
Yes, sir. Most definitely. Brother Fakhar Muhammad, representative of the National Solidarity Committee. We consider ourselves to be a revolutionary-minded scientific analysis of what's going on in today's society, in today's world. At the same time, bringing together a foundation, a body politic that's going to erase all of the plagues that we've been not only dealing with, but mentally that we've been incorporating into our own quote-unquote realities. And so with that, the National Solidarity Committee seeks to align all of the various organizations who claim to be for freedom and liberation of our people, whether those organizations such as MPEDM, such as the NOI, such as NBPP, many other organizations out here who are struggling for the value and benefit of our people. What the National Solidarity Committee says is we need to build a body politic, deal with the socio-political, social analysis of our people, put these egos aside, put your own particular foundations aside, and unite onto a foundation in which we could create our own, for example, our own Department of Education, our own Department of Agriculture, and so forth on. What we're seeking, again, is a body politic in which if we really want to build a nation, then we must begin the process of looking at the structural components that takes a nation to be built. And this, of course, is what the National Solidarity Committee seeks to obtain and manifest.
How long you been working on this idea, brother?
Oh, man, we put it down on as a charter in 2010, January 20th, 2010, we finalized the charter. The charter itself being very synonymous with, at that time, our brother, comrade General Muammar Gaddafi, when he was president of the African Union, formulated a charter by way of which the states of Africa combined their strengths and came up with the particular platform, particular foundation. We here, within the confines of this beast called America, we said in order to not only solidify ourselves locally, but also to show that we in solidarity on the international level with our African brothers and sisters, we said, let us too create a charter by way of which would be synonymous, not only on the international level with the AU at that particular time, but also a body politic which incorporates different aspects of various organizations within the realms here. And so since 2010, we've been pumping the National Solidarity Committee. It's been received very well in the mainstream. However, dear brother, all things that's received very well sometimes come off hesitant in practice. And as you know, oftentimes we can unite in theory, which is where you have your marches and your protests, you know, and your campaigns. Those are theoretical unifications. However, on the practical side of structural performance, this is where we lack as a mass people. Still there, Brother Rob?
I did check 1, 2, 3. I want to say big respect to my like Bojo Bans and the old song. Much of the place, guys. Well,
here come my cool song, straight up in the teeth on the snow down. And I Bojo Bans and Chick alone. Yeah, I get used to me. Just down. Lion rule the jungle, we don't fear. Burn like Gibraltar, always the fear. From the cheetah and the elephant, I won't get scared. If I should be angry, then I get afraid. I know anything me eat, I forget your regular beard. Use her free hygiene roots, in first aid. Instinct and ability, A1 grade. Physical agility, that's how me gonna put here. So try cut off the lion's mane. Wake up sleeping lion, then you stand in the vent. Send me no one you over and over again. Difficult to capture, now but ten came. Born accustomed to the tropical rain. Roar! Take me young to grow, I will suffer the servant to protect the old. Lion light the fire so the vibes can cold. Warriors behind the songs when the Congo man of old. Teaching the world with power and sound. The high places, low places, I come around. Tell all the hypocrisy come down. Expose themselves over all around. I'm under the band and this one is the sound. I come to teach the world but the original sound. Round that fear so more than there's no one come back around. It's up on the rhythm and I chant. Yeah, lion a roar and people start to tremble. King said the lion is just something we're humble. Just hear the lion and feed him with food. Don't be out of order and don't you ever be rude. Lion trample car, lion have him power. Lion try tango anywhere he was. 14 corners all over the earth. Save so the lion a move. Lion rule the jungle without fear. Firm like Gibraltar, I'll wear the beard. From the teeth, the elephant I won't have feared. If I should get angry, they all would be afraid. I know anything me eat, me have to get a regular bed. Use her free hygiene roots, the first aid. Instinct and ability, A1 grade. Physical agility, that's my middle name. Who dare to try cut off the lion's mane. Wake up, sleeping lion, you shall be in the bed. Send me no one over and over again. Difficult to capture now, but take game by while. Accustomed to the tropical plain. Murder style! Now we come my select to do play the part of the bass. I know what the man has said, son.
Yeah, yeah, ah, that's what them doing all the time. Lord,
what the man has said?
That's what them doing all the time.
All I'm pulling. Now, master, that one for the bass and live inside the house. What a DJ we can start.
Oh man, welcome back. Had a technical issue. Hey brother, could you pick up where you left off? Because I was trying to go ahead and get to know a little bit more, if people are getting to know about you and where you started.
Yes sir, most definitely. Man, pretty much I ended up by saying basically the National Solidarity Committee seeks to pretty much align these organizations up with each other to build a body politic. So we take different aspects from every organization. One thing that we realize, beloved, is that everybody's not going to join one particular organization. You know, if that's the case, we all be members of the Nation of Islam, or we all be members of the Black Panther Party, or, you know, what have you, or we all be members of NPDEM. But, however, the reality is that's not the case. Why? Because some things we may disagree with personally within the realms of each of these organizations. However, within the realms of each organization, we can agree to different aspects. Every organization has some type of component within it that we can agree on. And so the National Solidarity Committee said, okay, well, let's survey what we can agree on within the realms of these organizations, put them together, and then build from there. You know, we'd alleviate all that's quote-unquote negative and deal with the positive, deal with each organization on how they value our people, what's the benefit that our people can get from each organization. And so this is where the National Solidarity comes in again as it relates to that socio-political vibe in relaying that particular manifestation to our people.
You know what, brother? Go ahead. Let me know, give me some of that, what are the positives and what are the negatives? What are the things you're trying to address at that point?
Well, you know, for example, you have, let's take the Nation of Islam, for example. We're a respected organization. but let's put that in the circle and deal with the masses of our people as a whole as it relates to the Nation of Islam, for example, just to use this particular organization or particular structural point foundation as an example. Many of our people, whether we be Baptist, whether we be Christian, whether we be Muslim, whether we be Protestant, Catholic, whatever particular religious background that we are, may separate you from the Nation of Islam. That's dealing with the spiritual component. We all might not agree to that. Some of us, again, might be Baptist, don't agree to being Muslim, don't agree to being, you know, different spiritual components as it relates to Islam. However, we can agree with the discipline. We can agree when we see the FOI walking down the street, man, those some disciplined brothers. You know, that needs to trigger down to the young brothers, and that'll teach them how to be disciplined. None of us can disagree on the discipline aspect. So we like Malcolm X. You know, Brother Malcolm said we should leave the spiritual conversation in the closet, because if we talk about the spiritual conversation all day, we'll forget about the fact that we're living in substandard housing. We'll no longer talk about the oppression that we're receiving. We'll no longer talk about the lack of health care. We'll no longer talk about all the plagues that plague us. We'll be dealing with whether or not Jesus is our Lord and Savior or Muhammad was the last final prophet and messenger. We'll be dealing with those conversations, and instead, the killing of our people will constantly be going on day after day. The homelessness rate will constantly go up. The jobless unemployment rate will constantly go up. And so we leave certain conversations out of the topics, which we consider the negative conversations, because we'll be arguing back and forth. Whereas we can deal with the positive aspects on what will unite us more quicker, and what will unite us more quicker than talking about whether or not Jesus is our Lord and Savior, whether or not Prophet Muhammad is the last messenger, are the conversations on how do we get out of unemployment? How do we get out of being homeless? How do we get out of substandard housing? You know, these are conversations that unite us as a people. And so that's just an example of positive and negative aspect of conversation, positive and negative aspect of theory being introduced into practice. So we'll take the discipline component out of, like, an example out of the Nation of Islam. We'll take that discipline structure and then look at other various organizations on what they have to offer to the people.
What kind of feedback have you been getting?
Oh, dear brother, the feedback has been positive. It's actually been beautiful as it relates to the National Solidarity Committee, people who have actually not only sat with and conversated with the comrades within the National Solidarity Committee, but actually have seen and read the platforms and programs and the various literatures and documents within the realms of the National Solidarity Committee. It's all positive. However, what I was speaking upon prior to the power outage and the technical difficulties via this conference, we could unite all day long in theory. You know, we could unite all day long and say, man, that's good. Man, that's something we need. But the biggest problem is most of us are waiting for others to do the job, and then we want to kick in and add in the help. You know, so we're very good at theorizing as it relates to the masses of our people. We're good at theorizing, but the actual component of manifesting what the National Solidarity Committee is talking about, that becomes hard for a lot of people, because that entails responsibility. That entails obligation. That entails duty, you know, and a lot of us not up for responsibility. A lot of us not up for obligations or duty, you know. We just up for the little small time things that don't require that much from us. This is the hardship that we're facing within the National Solidarity Committee, because, again, it's being well received, but then once we get on that obligation, responsibility, and duty, you know, you begin to count the numbers and sit back and see who's really for freedom, who's really for liberation, you know. And again, brother, we got to stop using these particular terms so loosely. You know, we sit back and we call ourselves freedom fighters, we call ourselves revolutionaries, you know, all these beautiful sounding words that we call ourselves, but yet, you know, don't have the heart to even have the responsibility to obtain that. And so, again, the National Solidarity Committee, what we're saying is, look, man, we got to push all this weakness aside, all this cowardice aside, and we gotta build. And so the example that we always say we use is that house. You know, when you see a house being built, everybody's not doing one thing. That's the biggest problem we have, Brother Rob. The biggest problem we have is when we go to these meetings and people say we need to concentrate on one thing. You see what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. the biggest mistake that we can make when we sit back and say we need to concentrate on one thing. When you see somebody building a house, do you see everybody concentrating on one thing? No, sir. Everybody has a part. You got your carpenter in there. You got your electrician in there. You got your plumber up in there. You know what I'm saying? You got the guy who's doing the roofing. You got all these different components, these different individuals who's helping to shape this house that's going to be, in the end result, your home. Now, that's the same example that we have to put forward as a unified group, that we become one and understand that, again, it's like building this house. Somebody got to put the windows in. It's not the electrician's job to put the windows in. It's not the plumber's job to lay the tile on the floor. You know, it's not the one who, again, the plumber who's installing this toilet, it's not his job to put the drywall up. You see, so it takes different components to build a nation. And so when we sit back and say we need to concentrate on one thing, how do you take the one who's an agriculturalist, who's a farmer, who's there to help our people learn and prosper in the development of agriculture, and tell him, we don't want you to concentrate on that. We all need to concentrate on one thing, and it needs to be finance. It just needs to be talk about economics. No, that's for people who deal with economics. That's for people who deal with financial responsibilities, obligations. That's for people who sit back and put those strategies and tactics together on how we can maneuver the currency of America, and not only the currency of America, but how we build internationally and maneuver that currency right along with what we have here. That's their responsibility. Then it's the responsibility of the agriculturalist. It's the responsibility of those who are in health. It's the responsibility of those who are in our educational fields to do their jobs and put together those components. It's like you, Brother Rob. I can't say, brother, you live off your lungs, brother. That's it. We go concentrate on one aspect for your life, your lungs. You still got a heart. You still got brain. You know what I'm saying? You still got a liver. You still got all these different components, the bloodstream. You still got all of these various components within your body that unite as one to help your life go. If one fails, all of it triggers. You see what I'm saying? So gotcha. This is where we have to go in building that nation.
You know, tell me something, Al. You know, so what are you doing differently than those who came before you?
Well, it's like we say, you know, you have people who came before us, and really I wouldn't even say, you know, what are we doing different, because as the old saying goes, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, we had examples like the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, perfect example, you know, on what that brother built along with them brothers and sisters, the comrades of his, to bring about the UNI. It wasn't about the religious component. It wasn't about that religious aspect. It was about the foundation on building an African people. From there, you had the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Again, bringing these stores within the community, having, 75th Street sold up, the whole damn strip, Nation of Islam, you know, laundromats, grocery stores, this and that. It wasn't a thing where just Muslims shopping, you know, or believers in the Nation of Islam. No, this was the community. It was different things. It was not a concentration on one particular field. So what are we doing different than anybody? I wouldn't say it's too much difference, as it is just we followed in the footsteps as a reminder. Everything we're doing right now today, brother, is all reminders. Nothing I'm going to say to you is anything that's going to be different than what the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey said. Because we can all sit back and say we heard that before. It's like the meetings we talk about. How many meetings have we been to, you know, between you and I, brother, and between the listeners right now? How many meetings have we been to that you done heard the same thing over and over and over and over again? What's missing is not the theoretical component. What's missing is the manifestation, the practice. So, again, what are we doing different? We being a reminder. That's all. We just being a reminder. All we are is a reminder. We following in those footsteps of our ancestors who were also reminders. We're just reminders until we can manifest, until we are able as a people to bring about our nation. That's when we become different, when we actually bring about that national component, the international component of a structured African people. Then then can we sit back and say what we have done differently than our ancestors.
Hello, brother. Everybody's line is open. So, Brother Shakur, you up to you?
Oh, okay. I'm sitting here like, I'm wondering, can they hear me?
Yeah, he is.
Yahoo, brother, power to people.
Yahoo. Yes, sir.
You can chat, man, any time, man. I hear you lying. You moving stuff back there. What you doing, man? You packing and leaving or what?
No, that ain't me making no noise. I don't know what you hear.
Okay, I got the other brothers lined up. Okay, man, so chime in at any time. Add to what you just said.
Oh, man, I'm just sitting here as a student myself just listening to my brother. You know, I felt like I was one of the regular radio listeners for a while. I'm just listening to my brother, man. You know, he right on point, you know. Really, it's not nothing new under the sun. The only thing that we do is, see, a lot of times people get they get all reactionary. So it's like we just, you know, we try to move around too much instead of really staying focused. If you look at our enemy, the enemy ain't doing nothing different. You know what I'm saying? Now, they may correct certain mistakes, but they still moving forward in the same direction, same program. You see what I'm saying? All they doing is refining their program. And it's the same thing with us. You know, we not a big difference between the original party. We're not a big difference between, and I say Black Panther Party for those listeners that don't understand that term, the party. You know, I assume that our listeners understand, but like Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. used to say, we ain't going to draw no foregone conclusions. But, you know, we're not a big difference between our forefathers. You know, we're not a big difference between the honorable Marcus Garvey and also, you know, all of those who came before. There's so many, and we could spend a whole show just mentioning them. You know, but what we are is we're here to refine ourselves and listen and tune in to our ancestors and what the ancestors are telling us as we move forward. And they show us and they guide us in what mistakes were made and what to correct and what not to do and what to move forward and build on. What did we do right? And we're going to take what we did right and we're going to build off of that. And what did we do wrong? One of the biggest things that Huey always talked about is some of the mistakes of the original, Dr. Huey P. Newton, Minister Huey P. Newton. One of the things that he spoke on is how the original Black Panther Party, how they got too big too fast. You know, so we had a whole lot of extras in the movie, and really, they didn't get a chance to build a mass movement, sort of something that the masses can join, as opposed to just having all of the masses just being allowed to join into the cadre. See, the party itself is the cadre. And when you had that many people that were joining into the cadre overnight, where the original party was only about 30 members, okay, up until a little bit, probably less than 30 members, up until they made that move on the California State Legislature to protest them all for that, okay. And once that happened, it was instantly the party grew from 30 members all the way from 30 members to thousands, all the way from one chapter to many chapters. Okay, they went national and international in 1 second. Okay. Now, when you have something like that happen, you don't have the means of checking out, you know, doing a background check. You don't have a means of checking out. You don't have a means of processing that many members. You know, you don't have a means of processing that many members, and so it was sort of a double-edged sword. Because on one end, they didn't want to turn people away, but at the same time, it's just so many that they really kind of needed to hold fast, but they just did not have the process in place. And not only the government of the United States used that and took advantage of that, but also you just had some elements that were just not politically informed, did not have proper ideology, that may not have been directly or knowingly working for the government, but just, you know, indirectly, without even realizing that they helping out the enemy, was helping the enemy out without even realizing it. So, I mean, you know, that just to kind of slide on in with that, with the brother was saying, no,
Let me ask you a question. So, being a representative of the NSC, the National Solidarity Committee, and a member of the Black Panther Party, what's the difference in what you're saying and what the new Black Panther Party is saying?
Oh, we can go on. I'm gonna sum that one up for you, but that's what we could have that conversation.
No, we got time tonight. Remember that we didn't have time before.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you like this, brother. The new Black Panther Party, and this is coming straight from the horse's mouth. I had an 8-hour conversation with attorney. I'm gonna call him attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is the national chairman, a chairperson, or whatever the term they use for the new Black Panther Party. Now, this debate lasted from Atlanta, Georgia, to Savannah, Georgia, and Savannah, Georgia, back to Atlanta, Georgia. So it lasted a total of 8 hours. It was a very long debate. And the debate started when I asked him, I said, what is your party line? I said, you have no party line. The New Black Panther Party does not have a party line. And he said, well, what do you mean? We got the party line. What about the 10-point program? What about the 9 local objectives? They have something called 9 local objectives. And I said, no, that's not a party line. These are just can be considered a methodology that you use to promote or to go forward in your ideology. So basically, he kind of was stuck there. Like, he really was dumbfounded when I said ideology. He just was dumbfounded. And I'm going to tell you from my experience with the New Black Panther Party, I see exactly that debate that I had with him. I see how they don't have ideology. Because you can be a member of the New Black Panther Party in Atlanta, Georgia, and you can be pushing a Dr. York ideology. Now, for those who don't know who Dr. York is, you can go and Google that. I'm not going to go too long with that, but I'll just say that it is not exactly a correct political ideology. Okay, they dealing with, you know, like spaceships and Crystal City and stuff like that. No disrespect to my brothers and sisters, but I'm just laying out what they into. Okay, so you can be a member of the New Black Panther Party in Atlanta, where they pushing that. Then you turn around and, you know, you look at New Black Panther Party in Texas. And you may have brothers out there, well, depending on where you're at. If you're in Houston, they might be pushing the Nation of Islam type of ideology. Then you go to Dallas, and they pushing, in Dallas, they'll be pushing a correct ideology as far as on the level of the original Black Panther Party with a little twist, you know, maybe they got, you know, a little extra stuff in there. But... You know, they'll be like the only place that you can really get some type of proper political education. Then you turn around and go to New Jersey, and then they might be pushing a 5% Nation of Islam or Nation of Gods of Earth ideology. You get to where I'm going with this. It's like, you know, it's all filled with just a bunch of different. You take all of the religious or so-called religious or pseudo-religious ideologies that we have within the black community, you know, from the Nation of Islam, from the Nuwabians, from the 5%ers. You got all of these ideologies. These are not political ideologies, okay? Even by their own admission. You talk to any of them, and I know plenty of brothers and sisters from these different groups, and no disrespect to them, but even they'll tell you, you know, that's not what this is about. But if you look throughout the New Black Panther Party, you'll be hard pressed to find any chapter, with the exception of one that as a chapter that is actually pushing Black Panther Party ideology. Now, what is Black Panther Party ideology? Let's speak about that. Well, first of all, the Black Panther Party is not a religion. That's first and foremost. Let's get that out the way. It's not a religion. We're not trying to push no religious or personal ideologies, okay? The subject of whether there's life on other planets, whether there's life, other civilizations, whether there's reptilians walking amongst us. This is something that the Black Panther Party has chosen not to answer those questions, because we can sit here and have these conversations all we want, but if we don't have no freedom and independence and self-determination, then none of that stuff, we can't even get to having those type of conversations. Maybe that is a conversation that we need to have about, is there reptilians walking amongst us. Now, you have some, and I've had brothers and sisters that, you know, within the so-called conscious community, that they'll tell you, well, brother, well, if we don't deal with that, then we can't never get our freedom because, well, I'm going to be honest with you. It is evidence that points out that the United States government themselves, through their propaganda and disinformation programs, have actually put out a lot of these wild theories. So it kind of has a reverse effect. Whereas you would think that, oh, why would they put out something like that to make us more conscious, quote unquote? Well, they do it because they know that when people start believing that these entities that are causing us to not have our freedom are some type of superhuman, then they begin to believe that there's absolutely nothing that we can do about it. So why even try? So this is something that we may need to look into. Are these wild theories being put out by the governments themselves? Now, I'm not trying to tell you that I don't have any personal wild theories myself, but here's the difference between me being a member of the Black Panther Party and National Solidarity Committee as opposed to someone being in the new Black Panther Party. In the Black Panther Party and National Solidarity Committee, we understand that we have specific goal, we have a specific task, and that is the freedom, liberation of our people. Okay? All right. We are building towards a African socialist society. We are building towards getting control over our land, our natural resources, and our means of production. Period. Now, once we have that, then we can sit down and have these conversations. Then
yeah, you know what? Let me ask you a question. So, isn't it time to go ahead and stop all these damn debates? I mean, when do you say enough is enough for these damn debates? I'm sick of hearing that shit myself. I'm sick of going ahead and people going ahead arguing back and forth about a bunch of nonsense. But ain't nobody getting nothing done. And in the process, they're collecting money. So I say fuck it to all them debates.
That's exactly what I was about to say. That's why the debates are triggered, because most of those who trigger those debates, they're looking for some type of financial gain so that they can collect. They can have you come to their lecture, and they can pass around the collection plate. No matter what particular title they call themselves, it's all for financial gain, because any real individual who truly seeks freedom and liberation for their people know the conversations that you are supposed to be having. In part what the brother just talked about, securing your own land, dealing with sovereignty issues, dealing with agricultural issues, dealing with the structural components of building a nation. How many times have we, again, brother, how many times have we went to meetings that they literally talking about building a nation? The main conversation people are having is economic conversations. Man, how we need to gain more money. Or we can start charging people $20 at the door. We can start doing this. We can start doing that. It's all about gaining money. No conversation on real foundations of nation building. Now, granted, for example, the Moors have put that out there all day long, talking about the land, talking about sovereignty, and that's good. That's what we need. You know, those are conversations when you want to sit down and have those conversations, we can sit down and have it. When they talking to us about the law, getting the people in tune to the law, those are conversations that we should be having. We should not be sitting back having conversations on, like the brother said, whether or not, you know, are there spaceships out there, whether or not God is a he. Or she, whether
wait
or not,
a minute.
You know,
wait,
all
wait.
These different conversations that we have.
Hold on,
but
hold
then
on.
After the conversation, you still starving. After the conversation,
hold on.
It's more homeless.
Wait a minute, I'm trying to get my laugh out because that spaceship shit was killing me. I was Damn, that made me flip out my fucking chair. Okay, you know, but I, one thing I want to go ahead and get to real quick, since you're on that path about the conversation that should be had, economic development, about doing for ourselves, you know. Did you, anybody go ahead and pay attention to this march in Washington? Was that question put out there about economic development? Did you just hear the same old speeches about going ahead, we need jobs? I mean, I really feel to go ahead and create industries for ourselves would be much, much better. But going ahead and creating jobs, that's the same old bullshit they keep handing around. And you just keep on chasing your tail, ain't going nowhere.
Right.
Because the individuals going ahead and putting out the jobs going to snatch the damn table from underneath you, and snatch the chair from underneath you, and you're going to be trying to go ahead and sit at the table when the table going to go ahead and be snatched away from you. And then they throwing the food at you, and they trying to snatch that away from you.
Right.
So
at the State of the Black Union, it was a couple of years back. Mr. Farrakhan said it best. Since the anniversary of March on, even at the March on Washington, like Mr. Farrakhan said at that State of the Black Union, the cry was for jobs and justice. The anniversary of it is for jobs and justice. All the way up to now, the cry is still jobs and justice, you know. And so now on this March on Washington anniversary that they just celebrated, what was it, 50 years? March on Washington. It's still the same.
Yeah, 50
problem.
Years,
however,
and all they're doing is marching again.
Right. Look at this. They're still talking about the I Have a Dream speech. My thing is this. When will people talk about the Martin Luther King that got assassinated? The Martin Luther King that got assassinated was not the I Have a Dream Martin Luther King. That was not the Martin Luther King that got assassinated. They could deal with that Martin Luther King. They could deal with the you know, turn the other cheek, Martin Luther King. They could deal with the get hit in your face with the eggs, you know, receive the violence, get spit on and all that, get kicked on and stand up and continue to march, Dr. King. They could deal with that. What they could not deal with was the Vietnam, anti-Vietnam Martin Luther King. What they couldn't deal with was the anti-government Martin Luther King, was the anti-oppression Martin Luther King, was the anti-exploitation Martin Luther King, was the Martin Luther King who said he feared his people being integrated into a burning house, Martin Luther King. That's the Martin Luther King that we don't talk about. We still talking about the dream, Martin Luther King, that I Have a Dream speech, Dr. Martin Luther King. So even at this march, it was a hoax, because the very people who even was running that is not talking about freedom and liberation for their people. They talking about the Dr. King dream. But dig this, even half of them that's talking about the Dr. King dream think the dream has already been manifested through Obama. So you walk around with an Obama and Dr. King shirt and say the dream came true. You see, but again, that's not the Dr. Martin Luther King that got assassinated. That's not the Dr. Martin Luther King that they go publicize. So the media is taking control of this. But I don't even want to say the media. The government is taking control of this march, because the government is going to dictate how this march is going to be viewed, how psychologically you go receive it in your mental, because we're not going to talk about the Dr. Martin Luther King that you should be honoring. We're not going to talk about the Dr. Martin Luther King that you should be sitting back and revering. We're gonna put this Dr. King and his assassination to the side, and we're going to give you the Dr. King that we want to give you. It's just like Malcolm X. His government couldn't stand Malcolm X, did not like Malcolm X, did all that they could to assassinate Malcolm X. But what they do, turn around and give Negroes a stamp with Malcolm X and say Malcolm X was a good man. He promoted this. He promotes that. No damn well, they couldn't stand Malcolm X. Same with Dr. Martin Luther King. So, again, brother, with this march on Washington, it's a hoax to keep us docile, keep us marching, keep us protest. They can film that all day long. Niggas marching again, niggas protesting again. Matter of fact, we're going to send the president in so that niggas can hush up again, because, yay, our president has come, and he's a black man, he's a Negro, right along with the other Negroes. He's just a higher up a Negro. They should be happy and satisfied because their man is talking about the march on Washington. But again, he ain't talking about freedom and liberation for his people. He ain't talking about sovereignty for his people. He talking about sovereignty for Israel. He talking about sovereignty for his allies. He ain't talking about sovereignty for us. He talking about killing our allies. He done killed our allies. They're still killing our allies. So when we going to have a real conversation and not deal with this hoax that they give us and deal with what we should be giving us?
Well, dig this. Dig this. Another thing on Dr. King, they don't talk about, and I believe that this is probably what got him assassinated, aside from him speaking on the war in Vietnam. Dr. King was threatening their ass, and he was doing it. See, he was being a doctor with that doctor in front of his name. If you read some of his letters, you see it's well-deserving. This was a very, very cunning and very intelligent brother. And, you know,
exactly.
This brother, he was threatening their ass, doing it in a slick way, where I think they was getting it. They were really getting it. But he was saying stuff like, you know, if we are not allowed to engage in peaceful protests and peacefully let our message, if you keep attacking us, then we're gonna respond with violence. He basically said that, and it's like if you really stop, be like, whoa, wait a minute now, you know. This is somebody who had the eyes and the ears of millions. So back during that time, you only had two major things going on. You had the progressive movement, and you had the civil rights movement, a so-called civil rights movement. Okay? And the progressive movement was saying, we ain't with that peaceful protest. It was a unanimous decision that we ain't with no peaceful protest. If you hit us, we're going to hit you back. As a matter of fact, we might just come and hit your ass and just get it over with, because we know you're coming to hit us. Okay, that's what the progressive movement was saying. Now, the civil rights movement was saying, no, peaceful protest, we got to let them, you know, turn the other cheek, and we got to... If they hit us this way, then we got to turn this way and we got to turn that way. So imagine if Dr. King just one day came out and said, you know what, y'all, fuck this shit, man. Hey, they don't want to listen to us. Ain't no more peaceful protest. Just imagine if he said something like that. Now, I'm not sitting here and, you know, trying to say that maybe that's what Dr. King was saying, but you have to understand when he says stuff like that, like, hey, if you don't let us be peaceful, then we're going to be violent. You have to understand that the CIA, whether we think the King was going to ever do that or not, maybe they thought it. Okay, so, I mean, it's like he wasn't out here just talking. He was out here getting locked up, you know what I'm saying, and really getting it in. He was out there in the field, like the young brothers say on YouTube. They say, we out here in the field. Well, Dr. King was out here in the field, okay? A lot of these cats, man, they talking this nonsense. They ain't even doing what he did. And I don't even necessarily agree with all the moves he made, but at
you
least
know something
my brother...
else? Check it out. Hold on a minute. Hold on. You know something else? I'm shocked. Okay. You'd think at this point even his kids will be really repeating this message. They're not repeating this message. It's family. They're not. Their kids are not. And even his crazy ass niece, is she getting on Fox News telling a lot of the nonsense? You know, his closest relatives are not repeating what King is saying. So this is a problem to me, and this is what I recognize. I see that it's one big fat ass scam if your family ain't doing nothing, but they still living good. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna tell you, I think they've been approached
a
long time ago.
Right.
I think they've been approached a long time ago and told what would happen if they decide to fight. And they conceded, you know. So, I mean, you know, I ain't under no illusion that the King family going to do nothing but what they've been doing.
Exactly. That's different from, you know, when you got, let's take, for example, two components. We just lost our brother,
grandson of El Hajj Malik Al Shabazz. We lost our beloved brother. Now, he was doing, you know, people can say all day long and speak something negative about, you know, whatever the brother's past was, but he had the spirit of his father within him to move forward for his people. You know, and then your other brother we have today, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who's trying to follow the footsteps of his father as well. Now, people might have their negative things and aspects or what they say about Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. They might say, oh, man, he's not doing, you know, he ain't nowhere near his father, or he's not doing this, and all he's doing is that. But at least he has the spirit to move forward for his people and help them as it pertains to police terrorism, help them as it pertains to historical viewpoints of what went down. None of them was bought. Neither one was bought. And this is what we have to look at and understand who's picking up the flag. You know, the brother Shakur and I, we had this conversation all the time. Every time we had this conversation, like, man, you know, when we go out, man, you know, our children, our children's children, and the flag has to constantly go. You know, let's be real. Even our elders are admitting today that they dropped the flag. They dropped it. They dropped the ball. And now we have to pick up the ball that strategically they didn't strategize for us. You know, so we strategizing this thing. We putting the tactics in, you know. And so where do we go from here, man, is just strictly on we got to build this body politic. We could talk all day about historical significance, but, again, Brother Rob, like you say, you tired of you would think, all of us would think that, man, by now, you know, common sense would knock us in the head and be like, man, look, how many times do we got to see a young brother getting popped by a pig? How many times we got to see police terrorism or pig terrorism happen before we unite as a people, man, and build our own defensive force? Hell, that's common sense. But again, why haven't we done it? We still got people trying to go to police board meetings and complain about police terrorism. We still got people going to these police board meetings as if, you know, that's going to change the way the relationship between the pig and the people. No, what's going to change that relationship is when you build a defensive force. I say it all the time. What's wrong with the brothers who got armies? Why can't we walk these communities and have schedules? Why can't we have a set pace? You know, if you want to claim numbers, you know, whether it's MBPP, whether it's Nation of Islam, all these cats that got these numbers, where we at in the community with defensive force? One thing you can never say about the Black Panther Party is that they wasn't in the community. If you say the Black Panther Party, the original Black Panther Party I'm speaking about, Dr. Huey P. Newton, Black Panther Party. Hell, I ain't even just say Dr. Huey P. Newton, Black Panther Party. I'm going to say Dr. Khalid Muhammad, because I don't even consider Dr. Khalid Muhammad to be MBPP. I consider Dr. Khalid Muhammad to be Black Panther Party in his ideological thinking. He was our general. He was our general. And so with that, these are people who were in the field, man. They was walking the community. Wasn't no such thing as, you know, trying to assess, get to him, and, you know, you got to have an appointment to see this brother, just like El Hajj Malik Shabazz, Brother Malcolm X. Wasn't no such thing as an appointment for this brother. There's pictures all over his brother in the community, sitting in the park with the children, you know, walking down the street with no bodyguards. You know what I mean? Same with Dr. Khalid Muhammad. There's YouTube videos everywhere where you can literally see him walking down the street. He ain't flanked by 500 cats. He ain't flanked by this so many cats. He walking down the street. He's with the people. People love that, man. They love access to who is taking the realm, who's taking the reins to get our people going. Then our people will follow behind that. You see, so we got to start making the differentiation between who's who really in our community. And again, the brother Shakur, now we had that conversation all the time. Like, man, later fall, let, you know, letting people, we go to these marches and protests, man, and we sit back and let people get behind the podium and give lectures to our people that we know damn well are sellouts. But we sit there and we let them get up there and talk to our people. Come on, man, we got to stop this nonsense, expose people for who they are. If the vast majority of our people know damn well Jesse Jackson ain't shit for our people,
Why the hell are we still sitting back allowing this man to even give a speech or even give a lecture at any of the events that pertain to, quote unquote, where we should be standing giving those speeches of freedom and liberation? Let him stay with Bush. Let him stay with the stuff that he's doing, because eventually, like Kwame Ture said, we're going to get to the point where, at that point, when we move forward, it's going to either be the ones who truly seeking revolutionary freedom and liberation, and all others going to have to go. That's just it. All others going to have to go. We have to have an exposure program, expose these cats out here who claiming, quote unquote, leadership in our African communities.
So I really feel that, hey, look, you know, getting more involved in this kind of stuff, you know, building a stronger media apparatus will go ahead and deal with that, don't you think?
Exactly. And that's why we have brothers like Brother Dawa Yisrael, you know, who has the Yaz Real show. We have to start looking at those aspects. Who do we have in the media? The newspapers that we have out here that's pumping what's going on, you know.
This show right here.
This show right here. This what you got going on, Brother Ra. We got to start supporting it, supporting shows like this, supporting our brothers, man, supporting our sisters that's doing this. Don't just look at Channel 257, Fox, CNN, and think of them as the real TV show. You know, those are the real news. You know, what the hell is the real news? You know, we giving you the news that's in the streets. That's real. Your reality is real. That's what's real.
Yeah, you know, and I always say that a lot of us can't deal with reality. We stuck in fantasy and materialism, and those are the two strongest things that are killing us and affecting us to go ahead and really put our heads in the sand and look the other way.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have too many people out here just really trying to do stuff. Everybody seems to be going ahead and trying to make a buck or figure out a way to make money off this whole shit. And
yeah,
you see that
frustrated.
You get frustrated.
I'm tired of this, man. You know what, man? I'm going to just do what I need to do. I'm about to do me, man, because our people don't want such and such, man. Our people. But then you have to question the person who even saying that. How far have you went to even galvanize your people? Me and this brother on the phone, it's times we done walked in places, man, we should not have came out.
Mm-hmm.
Our family members should have been called and said, sorry to inform you, so-and-so and so-and-so is here in the morgue. But it didn't happen because when we go to them places at that time, Robert Taylor Holmes, Cabrini Green, the Ickes, you name it, we went, man. These brothers was organized. You hear me? I'm talking brothers on roofs with walkie-talkies. They was organized in their communities, man. Didn't know us from down. You see what I'm saying? When we walked in there, yeah, we were looked at. Yeah, we were, you know, they sent whoever they sent out to meet us at the front door. But we was welcome at the table because of what we were talking about. Not only what we were talking about, how we was representing the realities of all of us. That's
mm-hmm.
what the people need. Because there's no attacking. One thing we always stress in political, when we get political education, one thing you got to understand, you cannot attack your people. It's one thing to come and critique with your people, one thing to come and analyze with your people. But when you start attacking your people, you know, we had that incident on the West Side a couple of years back. Brother on the West Side wanted to go out and start talking to the brothers on the street. One thing we said, brother, whatever you do, don't attack the people. You know, make sure when you talk to these brothers on the corner, man, you try to galvanize them in a way that they're going to come towards this movement. They're going to come towards helping to build this nation. These brothers went out there, man, attacking the brother. Pull your pants up. You little niggas, man, y'all got your pants all up front. You look how you look. You should see how you look. Don't you know that that's that fag shit that was introduced in jail? And y'all walking around here with your pants down? That's because you're fags. Yeah, that's attacking the people. You don't already think that they know their pants down to their ankles? They already know that. So we don't attack the people. We give them substance. We give them something that they can relate to. We're not coming
and
on the street.
I'm sorry, brother. I didn't mean to cut you off. That goes into what we call strategy.
Exactly.
Everything we do, we have to be strategic. We have to ask ourselves, what is our intended outcome from whatever it is that we're about to say? And based on that, then we move forward. Now, if we intend to get a message to them, if we cannot get that message out by doing that, then maybe we need to, you know, we need to reevaluate that tactic as far as, you know, that whole attack. Okay? And also, you have a safety issue. Here, we are very few. We are the few as far as those who are trying to do anything. So if we get taken out, then that's one less person that is trying to do something and one more person that's not trying to do something that's going to be floating around still alive while you dead. You see what I'm saying? And it ain't got nothing to do with us being afraid and stuff and, you know, because the brother, he try to, you know, man, fuck that, man, and blah, blah. You know what I'm saying, man? I ain't scared of shit and all this other shit, right? It ain't about being scared. I ain't scared. You know, I'm one who can really travel and rotate throughout this city, whether we talking about the black community, the black community that speaks Spanish or the black community that speaks an Asian language. See, I have to put it in that perspective because, you know, I'm gonna stop saying Latino community. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna say the black community that speaks Spanish. But no matter where I'm at, I'm good. Okay. But you have brothers out here who claim that they ain't scared and I ain't scared of shit and blah, blah, blah. All of that, you talking, but then you know what I'm saying? Then, you know, you don't deal with Babylon like that. I don't see you walking up to the police and saying, what's wrong with you? You out here doing this and blah, blah, and all of that shit since he's saying that he ain't scared of shit. And I'm not trying to, you know, talk about our brother. You know what I'm saying? But that's our brother. But, I mean, you know, you have to really think about these things, man. If we're not using effective tactics that's going to bring our people towards revolution, then what we're doing is counter-revolutionary. You know what I'm saying? And that's what the brother, what the brother Fakan was saying, man. You know, you can't just go attack the people. Don't get me wrong. I've been there. I've done that. But that was when we were not politically in tune. We were not politically refined to understand tactics, to understand military tactics. The military don't do that. No, they wait to get you in first, and then they come hollering and screaming in your face.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? Well, first, what do? They'll persuade you. They'll tell you shit. They do anything and everything, man, to get your ass in. They use persuasion. They use tactics.
Exactly.
And we have to be, if we really want to be effective, we got to do the same thing. We got to start telling. We got to tell brothers and sisters, hey, you get down with the revolution, you get a $20,000 signing bonus. Okay? And just to get them in, because if you go to the military, anybody who's been in the military will tell you, you don't get fucking $20,000 signing bonus. They give your ass an increment like a pimp do. When you get in there, you think you're going to get $20,000 lump sum. No, man. They going to give your ass $20,000 over a 2-year period. God damn it, I can make $20,000 off of link cards in 2 years.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, we have to look at this, but it's strategic, though. It's some strategic shit, because a lot of brothers and sisters go and join that bullshit, thinking that it's going to be sweet. Okay? Well, we need to start being more strategic. Not saying we lying to the people, but we trying to bring the people towards something that's good for them. Okay, so I mean, we gotta really start looking at tactics. What can we do that is tactical? What can we do that is practical? What is the difference between idealism and realism? Idealism and revolutionary. Revolutionary and reactionary. We have to start really getting into them conversations, and those are the conversations we need to have if we're having a conversation, because we really need to be working. But if we're having a conversation, we do have to have some type of theory to back up our practice. But we need, if we're going to have some talks, that's the talk we need to have on strategy. How can we strategically move and move about? How can we strategically carry out the mission of getting our people to fight and take their own freedom in their own hands?
You know, at times, I really feel a lot of people are just too afraid. But somebody just sent me, you know, I just seen a little message from somebody. They're saying, hey, look, you know, the brothers in the street, you know, you can't show them fear either.
What did they say?
You can't show them brothers in the street a little bit of fear either. You can't go ahead and show them fear. You got to go ahead and then, you know, keep approaching individuals, but don't show them fear either when you go ahead and tell them, hey, pull your... He was telling them to pull their pants up. You don't show them fear either.
I wish
yeah, but you know, but that, that's the thing. You don't bring no fear to them, because they are first of all, you coming up to them, showing that you don't fear anything. You walking in certain areas, it's showing already there's no fear. However, again, as the brother was relaying, we're dealing with strategy and tactics. Why should I even have a conversation about this brother's pants down on his ankles? That's irrelevant to what. The intent is for the brother. That's going to automatically happen. Again, like the brother stated, the army, when you see the army out here, you can walk past an army recruitment center. They see brothers walking past all day long, pants down to their ankles. They don't come out and talk to that brother about his pants down to their ankles. They come out again and talk about that $20 signing bonus. They come out again talking about, you know, we can help get you scholarships. You see what I'm saying? There's different subject matters outside of the peripheral of what they're going to have a conversation about. They don't give a damn about your pants being down to your ankles when they approach you. Because, again, once you get in, that's going to change automatically. Their job is to obtain you and to fulfill their mission and their objective. They do not attack you. And so we have to look at the psychosis of this. You know, understand the psychosis of this. We are so lax with our own people. And, you know how they say, brothers, you know how they always say, man, black folks, man, we operate on CPT time. We'd be late for our own damn funeral. However, try that with the army. Be in the military and they tell you, be at such and such at 0500 hours. Your ass going to be there at 0445, 0430. 0415, you're going to be there on time, because psychologically there's an authority figure. There's repercussions. There's discipline. There's something that's going to happen if I don't get there on time. People, when it comes to us in structuring, when it comes to us in building, when it comes to us in developing and producing for our own people, we become lax because we feel as though, hell, ain't no discipline to what I'm about to get involved with anyway. Ain't no type of repercussions to this thing, you know. And so this is something that we have to understand that has to be put within the realms and the confines of us even building. There has to be discipline. There has to be all of this. But, again, when it comes to the Army, when it's like ROTC. ROTC, man, we had an agenda piece straight out of their book. And in this agenda piece, it marked down every – what they do in every month from January through December. The not only are they psychologically tuned in to the students, they are psychologically tuned in to the teachers. It's an all-around field. Their thing is to not just persuade a student, they persuade the teachers. The teachers, in turn, is access to who? The parents. So there's persuasion going all around in the vicious cycle. They don't attack the students. They don't attack the teachers and how the teachers are teaching, because they understand we're going to come in and substitute your way of teaching your methodology anyway. We're going to take your students, and hence for today, you get the Chicago public school system, which is going to end up eventually turning to an all-charter school system, which is going to end up eventually, because even today as we speak, Illinois is the only state, I believe, in the country that sits back and have all representative for students as it relates to these ROTC-type programs with the Navy, the Army, the Marines. All of them are in Illinois right now. Why? To persuade these students, to discipline them students off that. Now, the question is, why must it take, why do we have more trust in the U.S. Army? Why do we have more trust in the Marines to discipline our children, but we snap on a brother who seeks to help discipline a younger brother on the street? Why is that? Why don't we accept our own discipline from each other and allow us to discipline each other, allow us to go back to how we were before when, you know, you couldn't, you know, when we was younger, and I'm sure all of us could attest to this, when you was younger, you had about 50 uncles, you know, 5 mamas, 4 grandmothers. And if you was on the other block making noise, doing what you weren't supposed to do, you got your ass whooped on that block, and whoever whooped your ass walked you to your house and told your mama, I just had to whoop your son's ass. Then your mama gonna whoop your ass. The only thing you was hoping is that, man, please don't tell Dad. Please don't tell Dad. But it was community involvement. We disciplined each other. We disciplined each other. Now, we don't trust discipline amongst each other. We trust the Army. We trust the Marines. I'm going to send you to the Marines. I'm going to send you to boot camp. I'm going to send you. No, let's go back to the old days. Send them to the Black Panther Party, original Black Panther Party. Send them to, you know what I'm saying, this is where we need to go. Send them to the brothers. Don't send them to the Army. Don't send them to your oppressors' boot camp. Send them to the brothers in the community that can help discipline them.
Hey, what I'm going to try and do right now is I want to bring this other brother in right quick, because he's speaking up on the this group. They call themselves the Comedic Pipeline. I want him to go ahead and chime in on that and to add to what you guys, what the National Solidarity Committee is, and see if we can come to some kind of consensus about some stuff. And I like what I heard with the Comedic Pipeline people. So, Brother Kayla, you there?
Yeah, what's up, brother? Yeah, man. Chef, I like how you're using the terminology. Like, I'm having some effect. You're saying things like consensus and whatnot. I like that, you know?
Thanks, brother. Hey, explain, introduce yourself and to the brothers.
I'm Kyler Genesis. I'm a blogger, activist. And before I get into that, I want to talk about what the brothers were just saying about, you know, the young brothers and everything. I agree on a lot of points Bianchi was just talking about. And like I said on Brother Minister Dawood's show last night, I said, we black people, we have a problem with black authority, you know? And if people think that, you know, if black power is going to be the answer, you can't have black power if you don't have the ability to reward and punish people. If you can't punish people, you can't reward people, you might as well just leave them alone. And then it comes back to managing expectations. And when I start my show back up next month, I'm going to talk about managing expectations, okay? The Comedic Pipeline, brilliant idea. You know, Brother Devon Bell and the Black Wall Street USA people, they're doing dynamite things. But, again, we have to manage expectations. You know, we can't just tell people, you know, look, we're going to solve the problem. What happens is if you raise people's hopes, you raise expectations, and if you can't meet those expectations, they'll lose hope, and they'll turn on it. And that's what's happening to a lot of our movements. We come in with all these programs and all these ideologies and all this stuff, this, that, and the other thing, and when you can't deliver and everything, you get frustrated and turn on your own people saying, forget them. You know, I gave my life and everything to this, and you get bitter at the same people. You know, I hear that all the time, people attacking black people, not out of what they're doing because they're not listening or following you. Well, the whole thing is this, and why is it that black people are listening to Jay-Z, they're listening to Rick Ross, Lil Wayne, Chief Keef, and Gucci? Let's talk about that. You know, more black people are tuned into what Jay-Z and Beyonce is saying. Hang on to every word. Look how many people follow their blogs and listen to what they're saying every day, all these stupid things they say. And Rick Ross, a completely illiterate goon who talks to people who have lyrics out there that says, get your body count up, get your body, your body, your weight up, your body count up. My body got from double digits. Use Molly, which is tripping. Sisters using a drink that somebody put in a woman's drink to trick them into having sex and all this stuff. All this wickedness and everything like that. But people are listening to this in broad daylight on their radio. When I was coming up, we couldn't even listen to hardcore rap as it was hard back then. In the daytime, we played at nighttime. On the nighttime DJs in the radio station. Now they blast stuff that talks basically everything that's basically, no one's ever, I have yet to hear anyone ever say, from anybody ever say, that this music that they're putting up here is blasphemous to the black cause. You cannot call yourself a black leader or a black power anything, and you're sitting there and you're not, you have ain't nothing to say about people who are basically spite. It's like someone talking about your mother in front of your face. If someone's in there talking about your mother, okay, you're going to haul off the header. So the bottom line is this. If we don't start attacking these people who are agents, agent provocateurs who are sent in our community with the music industry and the radio and all that, to poison people's minds is exactly what they're doing. And then you have to draw a line. And then when you draw that line, you better have something on your side that people can say, yes, I'm buying into something because these guys are going someplace. And the only thing that's going to do that is the talk and the discussion about an independent nation. If we're not talking about that or putting that on the table and everything, that's going to get the attention of the world, okay? That black people reach the point where they say we don't think there's anything that can be reconciled in America. Anything else is basically buying into the fact that, yeah, this somehow America's system is going to work out for us. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I believe the only thing black people should have right now. If all these countries, if South Sudan could one day fight a long-out civil war for their own independent nation, we should go someplace on this planet and build something for ourselves. Now, it may not be the immediate problem, but psychologically, if every black person knows that's in the making, they're going to buy into your ideology. They say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and work my two jobs. But in the back of their mind, they're saying, well, because I got something better waiting for me. The same way black people do when they talk about dying and going to heaven. It's the same psychological. If you give people nothing but what's in front of them, then who are they going to look at? They look at the drug dealers, the pimps, the pushers, the gangbangers, all that. Why? Because that's immediate. That's in front of them. They see people down there pull out $10,000 in their pocket and everything and got all the nice girls and everything. They're not thinking about tomorrow. So what do you want to offer them to counter that? And this is done deliberately to challenge us. This is exactly what it's done to deliberately challenge us. Now, some of them say, yeah, I want to follow you. Then when they follow you, what are they buying into? You tell them, don't go fight for the white man's military. Oh, don't go to the white man's school and everything. But where's our school? Go join the white man's police force. Where's our police force? What can you give them that they can basically buy into that they can say, listen, this is no goal, the white man's economic system. Well, where's our bank that loans us money? Where's our consumer market? Where's our people that's trading and buying with us? Where's our economic system? What are people buying into if you tell them don't do this and they don't have anything to go to? So this leads me to the Kemetic Pipeline and why I'm excited. And anybody knows that followed my show for the last 5 years, I don't endorse anybody. You know, I don't. You know, when I come out, there's very few people I'll put a stamp of approval and say, you know something, this person is okay and everything like that. I'll say, okay, he has some good points and everything. But I've never in the years I've been doing this, ever really said, only a few people I've ever said, you know something, I checked them out, I looked into it, and I, you know, with all my knowledge and my skills and everything, I'm not going to put up anything before the people unless I absolutely know that these people, whatever they're doing is going to be in the best interest of our people. And then, and only then, and after that, I will still want to manage expectations. Okay, we got to manage expectations. Right now, we have our community, industry is very dangerous. We can't stop the flow of guns in the industry. That's just a fact of life. People are going to die. More people are going to die from black-on-black violence and gun violence, police brutality. That's a fact of life. There's nothing we can do about it as long as we're living in a situation where we're the minority here. That's just a fact of life. But at the same time, we still got to eat. We still got to educate our kids. We still got to live decent if that's where we can build families. So in that paradigm right there, what can we do? We're not going to crawl over and die. So we got to do something, okay? So what exactly do you want me, or you want to ask me a question about the Kemetic Pipeline, Brother Rob?
Yeah, go ahead. Just go, give me, tell me a little bit more about it, what it stands for, and because I know it under the National Solidarity Committee, this could also be another good partnership.
Yeah. Okay. What the Connect Pipeline is more is seeking getting the word out more than anything else. You know, it's already pretty much established. The Kemetic Pipeline is an organization and a corporation called the Kemetic Corporation. And it's an organization that created what they call an exchange for goods and services to people of color worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so what happens is this. We have like thousands of people around the world that trade goods and services from Africa to Asia to the Middle East to Europe, whatever. And so, therefore, if you have a business, a product that you want to sell or whatever, you can list it on the exchange, and then somebody around the world says, look, I'll buy units of that. And it connects you, and the Kemetic Pipeline handles the exchange of that, the shipping, the logistics part for that. So it's opening up black businesses to the global trade. That's one part of it. Then you have what we have is the Onyx Stock Exchange that we're building. It's going to be a stock exchange where, a securities exchange where black business can recapitalize. Okay, they capitalize for major investments, you know, that things like manufacturing, things that our communities need that can put people to work. And then we have the part I'm excited about is the thing called spiral funding. Okay, spiral funding is sort of like crowdfunding. What it is a system by which we're going to have 1 million contributors in this spiral funding thing contributing $10 a month. Okay, we're going to meet our goal pretty soon, $10 a month. And then out of that, we're going to take $5 million a month, right? And basically 70 people will get loans, with grants or loan, whatever it is, funding. It is funding. No check your credit report, none of that stuff like that. If you have an idea, that's approved. I mean, in other words, people look at the Kemetic Pipeline organization, look over your business proposal, see what it's about. And everything, and we're going to give our loans from $25,000 to one person every month. We'll get $1 million of funding. Like I said, that being said, it's still you have to manage expectations because it's 43 million of us, and that's still only 70 businesses a month. To really get to the point where we need to be at, there's no way we're going to be that because we're still a minority group. 99% of all black wealth and dollars flows out of the black community. Okay? So, therefore, what we could do is basically start the trend where some of that money comes back into our community by creating more businesses. Now, is that going to be like a magic wand that's going to solve all our problems? No. But will it help? Yes. Will it give a model for other businesses to join in and everything? Yes. It's a real possibility depending on what kind of support we get in the community. You know, this is the only thing that happens, and like I said, if we want liberation, the only thing that can solve our problems is ourselves. And it's hard to get our people involved in things that can liberate themselves. We don't need white people or anybody else giving us loans, everything like that. The answers are right among ourselves. And as soon as we get to that point, that's the hardest part, is getting black people involved and black people supporting something. Okay, that's the hardest part because we're so conditioned to believe that any sort of liberation is going to come from some white man sitting in Washington, D.C., signing some bill or somebody making a speech or whatever. And the answer all along is what other immigrants are doing. They're pulling their resources together and building, you know, and collectively building together. So that's
thanks,
a little briefing of the Kemetic Pipeline.
Thanks a lot, brother. How you two brothers feel about that?
As far as the minority aspect, always view ourselves as a majority, and that's just not looking at from this local level because there's many of us within the realms who travel internationally and who have hookups internationally, but also we are international people. And
I agree with that.
We have to stop allowing ourselves to be called minorities. That's number one. Look at it from a majority perspective. However, at the same time, we have to sit back. We have to sit back, and as it relates to business, my thing that I've always said to the economic specialists, as I call them, or those pertaining to the economics, when we're dealing with the subject of how do we move us as a people,
and we start talking about the masses of our people, whether we're talking about 50 million of us here, whether we're talking about whatever the numbers we give for us being here, again, it has to be what we always consider strategic and tactful building. If we have an economic conversation, are we just having an economic conversation based on the American currency and expect and believe that, you know, when we're dealing with stock exchanges, when we're dealing with all these other terms, are we talking about just American currency, or are we also developing to a stage where, if hypothetically the U.S. current, the U.S. government decided itself, or the federal government decided itself to sit back and say, well, we're going to X out this currency and we're going to bring in this and that. Or do we have a plan B? And this is just for those in the economic level, on the economic field. Do we have a plan B? Now, again, we're dealing with ways of thinking. And again, these are the conversations that we pose when we sit down at the table, because when we think on those particular levels, we have to sit back and say, not so much that we would disagree with a financial plan, because again, we are here in America. And of course, you and I have to eat just like the next man have to eat. Some of us might have jobs within the realm of the American society. However, at the same time, while we are thinking on the higher levels of development for our people, we also understand that the same way that we are thinking, also this government is thinking. They're constantly planning their future as well. They control the currency. So when we sit back and say a black bank, we need to have our own black bank, there's no such thing as having your own black bank in America. That's impossible. You can never find a black-owned bank in America because it's not your currency. It's not your note. It's America's note. They control the mandates, the policies on how you spend that currency, how it flows through the American government, and therefore to truly sit back and say that it's our bank would mean that you control the flow of currency, you control the policies that relate to that particular currency. There is no particular one you answer to but yourself in relationship to that currency, such as the American government, who answers to nobody but themselves as it relates to that particular currency. But again, that does not negate that, yes, we have to sit back and establish the financial means and the financial security so we can eat here. But again, I always lay on the table, we must always have plan B right along with plan A, own up to plan Z. Because if they decide again to flip into this Euro state, or they begin to say, well, let's mix up this Mexican currency and European currency, and we go create this currency. Once they fold that which you might have in your account, that which I might have in my account, that which the brother might have in his account, and that sister might have in her account, may be wiped out. They're going to have a new policy for you. They're going to have a new mandate for you. They're going to dictate how much you now have, how much that's worth. How do we bypass when that situation happens and sit back and still say that's all right, because internationally we've been trading gold and many other minerals on an international level. And that's the only thing, again, that I would say that I like to put on the plate or on the table as it relates to that. I'm down with sitting with any economic idea that's going to be a benefit and value, even within this belly of the beast. But as long as we have a plan Z for when this diminishes, because we all know it's not worth what it is today, it's not worth what it is. Once it diminishes, have we sat down with other economic specialists to overcome what may happen in a relationship to the currency of America?
Okay. Hey, Brother Shakari, you there?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay, how did you feel about the presentation about the comedic pipeline?
I'm listening to the brother, and I'm digging a lot of what the brother said. Just to add to that, though, it's just something that just I was thinking about. Now, we here as being those who have. Well, some freedom fighters. Some will consider themselves something else, but I'm just going to go ahead and just say freedom fighter. As being a freedom fighter, it takes a cadre, it takes a group to be able to, no matter how hard it is to develop, it has to be done. But it takes a really a group in order to make it happen, because let's say I'm the best revolutionary in the world, but if I ain't got nobody to check me if I'm incorrect, you know what I'm saying? Then I'm just out there on my own thing. And a lot of times, you know what I'm saying, I'm bringing this up because today we had a program at Chicago State University. It was, you know, the All African People Revolutionary Party was there. They also had something with Africa. It was a program before that. It was Africans from the continent. It was a few, you know, displaced Africans like us. But yeah, it was a brother that was there that he had spoke on some topics, but we can get into that later. But basically, so we have to have, it takes a cadre to check each other, you know. Brother tell you, it's been many times that me or him or one of the other comrades, we may have been, like, way off on some shit. But because we've been all trained in correct ideology, or should I say more correct ideology, proper political education, that's a better term. And even if we don't have a perfect ideology, but we have the thinking process, the logical processes to be able to break it down and correct what's incorrect and check each other. You know, so that's one thing that we need to have. And also definitely implementation, moving beyond that from this stage here and applying the theory and the practice. So definitely, you know, I'm all for that which can push us forward. And I'm gonna tell you, I'm one who, hey, brother, tell you, you've been knowing me for years. I'm one who, if you say some shit, I'm gonna go out there and try to do it. You might not even know I'm out there trying to do it, but you say something to me, I'm gonna experiment and do this and turn this knob and push that button or whatever. I'm going to experiment to try to make it happen and put it into practice, you know. So, brother, don't be surprised, you know, if you know, you get a call from me and I'm talking to the other brother on the phone. What's the brother's name?
You know what? I'm gonna make sure I make sure y'all got his number, because I want you to go ahead and chime in on that. But he just he's got to leave pretty soon. He wanted to go ahead and give a response. So go ahead, brother Caleb.
All right. The brother was asking about the monetary, American monetary. That's the whole thing with the Kemeti pipeline, and also the African bullion, gold bullion bank. What we're going to do is we're going to basically, our system is going to be based on the African continent. We're going to be working with every African government, and we're going to build our own monetary system, okay, using two ways, the gold bullion, you know, by monetizing gold, bullion, and other precious metals, and leveraging those and everything like that, and also what we call electronic money, okay? So, in other words, basically, let me show you, give you an example of how it works, okay, with the Kemeti Pipeline Bank. Okay, well, we have the Onyx Stock Exchange, right? Let's say we monetize diamonds, okay? We mine the diamonds and we monetize it. In other words, basically, instead of us shipping the diamonds to Israel for it to be sold, we can stockpile the diamonds ourselves, right? And then what happens is people are able to, we're able to measure our currency reserves based on the value of what we have stockpiled. See, Africa is not doing that. Africa is not only does Africa does not have this technology and infrastructure, they're letting foreigners come in and monetizing the, their diamonds and minerals and taking the minerals outside the continent. We're going to reverse that. And this is what we're doing with the African Bullion Bank. And we're going to store the gold bullion in African governments in their own central bank so their banks can have solvency. You know, so this is a dramatic pipeline, and what we're doing is a revolution as far as money is concerned, as far as black business and money is concerned.
Hey,
so,
brother,
you know,
that's what I want to hear, brother. That's what I want to hear.
Now, hold on. I have to say this, brother. I really have to say this. Okay. We don't fear nobody, but we must be strategic. It's a lot that I want to talk to you about that I'm not even going to say online. We need to speak offline on that.
Oh, yeah. But like I said, we're at the point now where, you know, we're already doing, it's already in motion and whatnot. They can't stop us. So, you know, all the secrecy and everything like that.
Don't say that. Don't say that, brother, because this is not what you're speaking on is not new. It's been done by a nation that has a whole army that was shut down.
Right, you're right about that. They probably have to, like I said, there's always that possibility that somebody could just start a war. But like I said, do you just roll over and die, or do you just basically just keep moving, you know? Like a colony of ants. You see an ant, you stop on ants, right? You see ants moving, they're moving up dead bodies and everything. You can stop on the ants and say anything what you want. But you come back 5 minutes later, they're all regrouped and they're still doing the same thing. That's how we have to be. That's what spiraling
is. I agree. I agree. The only thing that I will say is that we need to be more strategic and really we don't want to get shut down for what we're saying. We'd rather get shut down for what we're doing.
Yeah. But
you see what I'm saying?
This is happening. It's not going to stop. And what we need is support. You know, that's what we need. We need support in the black community. You know, that's the only thing that we need is support. The Black Wall Street USA, you know, I'm going to try to put the links up in the chat room. And the Kinetic Pipeline, I'm going to put the links up in the chat room. I urge everybody to get involved with the Spiral Funding. If you have a business, know people that need to build businesses and stuff like that, the funding will be available. Okay, one thing I can say like that, when you put something on the table like that and say, look, the funding will be there, you know, and get active and form your own Black Wall Street group and division and wherever you live at and your associations and everything. We have training and all kinds of things. And the Kinetic Pipeline is linking us up with Africa. I'm working with different African countries, Ghana, Liberia, South Africa, and soon Namibia, Zimbabwe. We got good connections with the Mugabe people. We have to be careful about that because there's still U.S. sanctions on there. So we're treading water right now as far as our legalities and everything. But the bottom line is this. We have people, dynamic people, that are on the continent, that are working with different ministers of finance and everything like that. And the whole thing is black people in America have tremendous wealth that we don't invest. Black people in America do not, if we invested 1% of our wealth, we would be able to raise $10 billion a year. Just 1%. 1% can be just everybody take $10 a month and put it away somewhere. Okay, when we launched the Onyx Stock Exchange and everything, you know, every black family should have something where they're building their little portfolio. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme, but it's empowered. When you basically just say, yeah, we control this many assets in the Kinetic Pipeline, we're trying to get our assets in the Kinetic Pipeline up to $1 billion at least by the next year. You know, $1 billion just in assets in the Kinetic Pipeline. That's before we even really launch into on the continent on a global scale, okay? You know, we're doing things like mining, oil drilling. We're moving into fields black people have never been into before. If we basically ride drive cars, shouldn't we be able to produce oil? Shouldn't we be able to have gas stations? We're investing in gas stations, okay, in the black communities. We don't own gas stations, but yet we buy gas, okay? We're investing in all these things, all these infrastructures that we're partnering with black businessmen that have been out there but never had the working infrastructure or network of people to come with, and that's what we're building with. You know, it's about building. And then what we have to do is have the support on the ground for the people to say, yeah, look, you know, we don't understand everything, and maybe not as move as fast as we can and everything like that, but we also know the Comedic Pipeline, Black Wall Street, all these different people are working for our interest in that. And that right there, when you win the support, they both said about Khalid, that people love Khalid Muhammad, that's true. When the black people, we be able to look at different organizations and really look at things and say, these people are doing the right thing. I may not agree with what they're talking about 100% and everything, but let's get behind them and support them. If not support them, just say, look, okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, we sat here for 400 years, and we gave this man's system the benefit of the doubt. A lot of black people call him for milk and still believe they could change the inner city, you know, with, under this man's system. It's never going to happen, okay? So if you can give the white man all that, the benefit of the doubt and everything, why can't we take time and give the black man, black people, a benefit of the doubt who are doing the same thing? That's all we need is the backing and the trust of our people.
Well, okay. Hey, Kenny, I'm back on the line. Can anybody hear me?
I hear you.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, trust me, my phone had went out.
Well, I'm all for it, brother, and it's a whole lot, like I said, that I'm not even going to speak on right now, you know, things in motion, but I would like to have offline conversation.
Yes,
we'll work that out. You know, I want to switch gears here just a little bit. We always hear about black-on-black crime, black-on-black violence. You know, the biggest thing I want to go ahead and start hearing something, I want to go ahead, because this sister put it out there, she made me think. You know, she was like, you hear about that black-on-black crime, black-on-black violence, black-on-black, but I don't think we put a bigger emphasis on white-on-white crime, white-on-white violence, and how that really affects us.
You look at that every day. You see that every day on the news. You know,
they glorify that. They go ahead and they'll glorify what we, I mean, and they literally glorify what we do, you know, to go ahead and justify them doing shit to us. But we don't go ahead and hear how horrible these people are doing white on white. Any brothers got anything you got to
say
about that?
You see that?
Somebody brought that up. That was brought up today as far as white on white violence and white on white crime. And, actually, it was brought up in English professor, and it broke it down statistic-wise. When you look at the percentage, white-on-white crime, black-on-black crime, or violence, I should say, Asian-on-Asian violence, Spanish-speaking Africans, on Spanish-speaking African crime, you know, all of it is statistically about the same. It's all the same, but it's just black-on-black violence seems to get promoted almost as if they're trying to pull a Birth of the Nation move. If whoever remember the movie Birth of the Nation, that's where they put that out there, to put propaganda out there to basically make it look like it's some type of urgent thing with black people, that we gotta get rid of these people because they just savage, you know, and they promote, they use the media to promote that type of attitude when it's really the same thing going on in the white community and every other community. So, you know, I mean, we clear on that. I mean, you know, that's
the hypocrisy is this. So the Sopranos was a top rated show. And they'll say, yeah, he was a father figure in the show. He was a father figure. James Gandolfini, he was a good actor and everything like that. Goodfellas, one of the highest grossing movies. Godfather, comes on every holiday like it's a national treasure and everything. And the hypocrisy, it's like what it is white people don't fear crime. They fear black crime. You know, I look at some of these shows where girls, young white girls are getting killed by serial killers and everything. And this one guy had killed like around 30 women up in Seattle, something like that. And this happens all the time. John Wayne Gacy raped little boys in Chicago. You had Ted Bundy. You had all these people You have the mafia, you got Hell's Angels, outlaw bikers all across this country dealing meth and everything. But somehow people get amnesia, you know, and start, they don't even look at that as white. You know, it's like, don't you understand that human nature, there's going to be people that decide to do crime and for the easy life and everything. Black people are no exception. And the bottom line is this, those white people had choices. They're still white in America. Why do they choose to be criminals? Why you got the Aryan Brotherhood as the most powerful gang in prison? Nobody talks about that. The Bloods and the Crips can't deal with the Aryan Brotherhood. The Aryan Brotherhood is so powerful right now. You have judges right now in Colorado living in hiding. Anybody know about that? They don't talk about that. You got judges and prosecutors living in hiding of the Aryan Brotherhood because they got killers out there. And if
you know
something,
hey, Kayla, check it out. Because I saw this piece. I think it was like last year on how these guys, the Aryan Brotherhood. Aryan Nation, now this Aryan Brotherhood, those were the ones involved in killing those judges last year. And
they were killing judges. It's like, how come there's no outcry? How come that's not on Fox News when they're talking about the growing, you go to rural areas of Utah and Texas, and you got these white guys that don't care. They'll kill police, state police in a minute. They don't think anything of it. You know, but the bottom line is, they're going to use this incident in Oklahoma where one was black, one was Hispanic, one was white, and they'll say these black youth, they just killed a jogger for no reason, you know? And the black kid didn't have nothing. He was just riding in the car, but they keep flashing his face on the TV screen.
And look, when you view this whole thing, again, you see this whole media aspect on black-on-black crime. We see it on Fox News, we see it on All Day Long.
As if they care, if they really care about black-on-black crime. As if they really care.
And like, right, and you know, they put it on black-on-black crime. But the psychosis of it, it's like entertainment for the mind that's already in tune to go in that particular direction. Now, look at the difference between white-on-white crime, and I'm not talking about white-on-white crime as you see in the quote-unquote black community crime. The white-on-white crime that they choose not to talk about, it's more devastating than the black-on-black crime that they talk about on TV. The brother just brought up some simple examples. Godfather.
Yeah.
Scarface. Goodfellas. Those white-on-white crimes wasn't foolish white-on-white white-on-white crimes like we would consider in the black community. Those crimes
that was about power.
That was about, when you're talking about Goodfellas, white-on-white crime, that's about power control of regions. When you're talking about Godfather, power control region. When you're talking about white-on-white crime, when you're talking about Israel versus Russia, those white-on-white crimes that they choose not to talk about, because that's not petty crimes in the like in the black community. That's white-on-white crime dealing with power on who controls the country, who controls the continent. That's not nothing psychologically that they want us to be in tune with on that path. Now,
Italy is so dangerous right now. Italy is so dangerous right now that you got the Sicilian Mafia now is in Rome, and it's basically a threat to the state of Italy. You know, that's how powerful the mafia is. The bottom line is you almost never hear about this.
And you're not going to hear about that because, again, that's not entertainment. That's a threat. Entertainment is the quote unquote black on black crime. Just y'all. He drove past and shot the baby, innocent baby. He drove past. That's not black on black crime relationship as it relates to power, as it relates to anything of that magnitude as a Israel versus a Russia white on white crime, as a Italian versus, you know, German Jew or what have you crime, anything of that particular nature. We're dealing with two opposite factors of crime. When you speak of white-on-white crime, at the end of the day, white-on-white crime even goes on in this country. Judges versus the police, the sheriff department versus your local police station, the FBI versus the CIA, the CIA versus the DEA. But at the end of the day, even though they white-on-white crime goes on every single day, at the end of the day, guess what? They fight for the same objective in control.
controlling us. It's about power. And
exactly.
CIA
exactly.
and the FBI can't stand each other. But the bottom line is this. And no one ever says, oh, that's dysfunction. You know, that's dysfunction. CIA and the FBI not getting along, or local police not getting along with the FBI or whatever like that. No one ever says, well, that's dysfunction. Now, if that was a black agency or a black country and the two agencies didn't work together and something happened or there was a breach of
security. Oh, they put it on blast.
Yeah, they'll say, well, that country, see, this country can't do anything right. This country is dysfunctional and everything. Well, all the time. Matter of fact, people don't even notice that the attack on Pearl Harbor happened because there was jealousy in the Navy. That people were trying to spite hold information, right, to let the Japanese attack to embarrass somebody because somebody didn't get passed over a promotion. That was in the U.S. Navy. But that doesn't be talk, that doesn't talk about. They make it seem like their institutions are so solid and so above the fray that stuff like that never happens. You mean tell me that the Japanese slipped through the thing when you had advance warning and everything and information was held back because somebody had an interrelation jealousy or there was strife or division. One boy came from Wyoming and one boy came from New York, and two people. Even though they were the same, so-called under the same flag, they didn't basically put their country first. I thought white people were so patriotic and so loved this country so much. You know, you mean tell me they were only about themselves
right.
and everything? But when they talk about us, when they talk about Muhammad Ali, oh, yeah, how dare you talk about not going to fight for your country and everything like that. What about all the whites who were draft dodgers during the Vietnam War, even during the Civil War, who went to Canada and everything? Look at all the black boys who died in Vietnam. No one ever talks about that. Them same white boys are in America, in corporate America, living a good life. George Bush didn't fight for his country. He got a deferment. Dick Cheney, none of them, you know, Rush Limbaugh. None of these people formed Vietnam because they got deferment and everything. But it's okay because George Bush, he's white. He fits the role. He's a white man. No one's going to question his love for America. You know, but with us, we can't even raise objections. And say, wait a minute here, why are we dying for a war? We have nothing to fight about. Oh, you people, we let you guys at the front of the bus. Now we ought to be able to take 60,000 of you and send you to the jungles of Vietnam. That's what that's all about. You know, like you said, power. You know, power.
Well, you know, he's right on point. And and just to reiterate about what you were saying as far as, and particularly when you speak on the CIA, FBI and DEA, and how those three agencies have and the ATF, how those three agencies have been traditionally going at it. NSA, I forgot to mention them. When the NSA was first developed, and you actually can read about this in a book called Body of Secrets, which is a book about the history of the NSA and how they were developed. If you read in Body of Secrets, according to NSA agents themselves, they were saying how when they first were developed, they didn't even have a goddamn budget, and how the FBI, they would establish the established agency on the block, and they used to go to the budget meetings, the budget hearings, and suck up all the budget, and NSA didn't get shit, so they just stopped, the NSA just stopped going to budget meetings and started doing all types of illegal shit to get their money. And before you know it, they secretly built what they call the black budget, and they secretly built their budget, and before you know it, they had an army, a navy, and an air force. They're the only intelligence agency with an army, navy, and air force. And I mean, and then now they ain't giving nobody no information. So this shit the NSA got, they got piles and piles of information. They got information on spies in this country right now, or spies that may be in the FBI, spies in the CIA, but they ain't going to tell them about it. They like, well, shit, as long as they ain't over here. And it's funny when you think about it, like this is the shit that they doing. They doing this shit. You know?
And this is what I understand, and this is no offense to our brothers from the 60s and everything. If you really look at COINTELPRO, see, the thing is, they played us the way we should have been playing them.
Exactly.
We should have been playing them. Well, I talked to the guy in the CIA. We should have been like, oh, yeah, you know, I talked to the guy in the CIA because I told him some information about this over here. You know, he said, "Nah, that's not such a big deal." Oh, the FBI was like, "Whoa, what's that? That'll cause that the Ottawa Sunday said cause this dissension in the rank." Make the mistake is that we come at them as a united front, we hit them all as a united front, instead of saying, "You know something, your agency is not so bad. You know, I'll tell you something, don't tell them really anything." But making it seem like that, then have this agency competing with this one, and in the process, they'll end up tearing each other apart. That's the thing. But we didn't do that. You know, all law enforcement was all the same. We could have played the local police against the FBI, you know, and all the stuff like that back and forth. We should have put the script on them the way they did with us.
Well, you know what, brother? Hey, it's funny he mentioned that. I know brother Foucault is over there, like, just smiling. It's funny you mentioned that, brother. One of the things that we had outlined is one of the mistakes that was made in the original party was that they did not have an intelligence apparatus on the same level to basically dish back out what was being thrown on the level of disinformation, on the level of spies and our shit. I mean, you know,
we could have information about them. We could say, yeah, this FBI guy down here was shooting heroin with a prostitute. You know, you could put that out there.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And then somebody said, well, we got to investigate. We got to stop what we're doing and investigate that. They'll call you and I didn't know you was an FBI agent. You know, they'll start out in their then all the informants in your organization will come out.
Exactly.
Or put
disinformation out about a certain police officer that's talking to the feds about to snitch on the rest of them. Before you know it, they did something to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. We didn't do that. We didn't do all that. You know, we didn't get dirty. We played the original Black Panther Party was basically like Minutemen. They were really, really true blue, and they were the good. They were kids. They were good. They were the good guys. You know, but this was a dirty world they were trying to take on. And a lot of the ones that are exiled right now, they said, when we look at it now, after they lived in Africa, they saw how the real world works and everything, and they were like, you know, we had no idea that these people would come at us like that, you know, all these dirty tactics and everything. You know, so that's the whole thing.
And that's what we stressed earlier in the conversation when the brother had mentioned refining. You know, we have to look back at historical significance and see what was negative and see what was positive. We don't negate the positive. We add on, we bring the positive and we expand on the positive, but we learn also from the mistakes. And so that which we see that we did not have back then, we build that today. We bring that into presence today. And we understand that there are certain mechanisms that we didn't have then that we should have today that should be, you know, out for us today. And we move forward from that. We don't concentrate on, oh, man, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. Okay, well, we know now what they didn't do. Now do
right.
That's manifested into practice and move forward. That's one of the things that we, you know, the conversation, people seem to turn, for even with the Black Panther Party, people turn that conversation and say, oh, man, the Black Panther Party, man, they failed because they had internal strife. No, they didn't fail because they had some internal strife. They failed militarily. They had this not just COINTELPRO. I mean, the way they came at them, like you just said, the way they came at them was so harsh. I mean, it was like, man, you know, that's not a failure with just internal, because even the internal strife was stemmed from the root of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how can we sit back and say that the party itself failed because of their own internal conflict when the internal conflict that they had was rooted in the psychological warfare that was demonstrated against them? Now we look at that. Now we sit back and we see what was played against us.
Another trick they did.
And then
they
didn't even look at their own outcomes, because now the stuff is made public. Now they sit back and publicize what they did to you. Okay, well, now we have one of the things the brother and I was told by people like our transcendent ancestor, Geronimo Jijaka Pratt, and others that were in the Black Panther Party. They said that what we have today is something that they did not have back then. And we asked, well, what is that? And they said, you brothers got a blueprint. We didn't have a blueprint back then. We didn't have what you have access to today. And so now that we know we have access, now that we know we have blueprints, we have to expand on that. We have to develop on that, and we have to move forward in a better and strategic way to sit back and say, we need certain rams now that we can sit back and make it, as Brother El Haj Malik Shabazz, peace be upon him, said, Steven Stevens.
Yep.
I want to make sure that, Brother, don't forget, Brother, remind me to give you we have a pamphlet, booklet out there. It's not out there, but I'm saying this. We have a booklet called Intelligence, and you need to check that out. So it's really not meant just for one organization. It's really meant for the movement in general. Anybody out there who saying that they on that level, they really need to read this book. And it goes into detail what you were just talking about, brother. It
mm-hmm.
goes into detail. Just trust me on that. So, that's one of the things that has been missing. And when you start really looking into, when you're speaking on refining processes, what we had to do, we spend years doing this, and we try to warn our brothers out there. We try to warn our brothers out there, like the new Black Panther Party. We spent 4 years trying to warn them that, you know, the direction they're going, it's like, man, that's not what's happening, you know.
Yeah,
you
unfortunately, what they're doing is they're taking news clips from y'all back in the days, and they're misinterpreting what you're doing, and they didn't see the process y'all got to in the 70s when the Black Panther Party. Because I had aunts and uncles in the Bronx division of the Black Panther Party back in the days. And they were like, well, there's some people in there, going in there, and they said, well, we had a program, we want to do this, we want to do that. And then there were some people coming in there talking a bunch of crazy stuff. And then the police would come in there, have an excuse to come in there and break it up before it even had to start. And those were planned. And come to find out, they were interviewing people that were saying, yeah, I was paying. It doesn't, let me tell you something, if somebody's hungry and he got to pay his light bill, and somebody in the FBI tells them, look, I'll give you $100 for every day you sit in there. Just tell me everything you hear. Okay? I'll give you $100 if you go in there and say something that you take claim responsibility for this store that was robbed on this street right here. Okay? And then somebody say, yeah, somebody in the organization say, yeah, we did this, that, and the other thing. And the people say, "Who? We never sanctioned that." And people go, like you said, the Black Panther Party had no way of vetting who was coming in the organization. It was people doing their own thing and everything, and there was no real somebody saying, no, that's not what we're doing, that's not the official policy, whatever like that. So therefore, and then they have people coming in there saying, well, the Black Panther Party is too soft. That's another trap they always trap us Black people with, you know, you too soft, you know, you too soft. And you may have a plan that's going to work, right? But someone says, you know, we don't want that to work. So what we're going to do is, how you kill a man with a vision, give him another one, okay? So we're going to have somebody come in there and say, you know something, and this is what happened with how a lot of leaders for the Black Panther Party come out. Somebody
you
would
know
get
what,
up
you know what, Brother Caleb,
get...
hold on. You know, that's what happened to just about every group, and that's what happened to one of the problems that Martin Luther King was having, because he was having a whole lot of internal strife with
mm-hmm.
these whole ass-kissing, bootlicking niggas. They used to have a lot of problem with that, these sellouts.
But the sellout don't always appear.
But
the sellout don't always appear like a bootlegger. The sellout could sound real militant at one time. You know, he could sound like he's the real thing. And they always appear to your most angriest part. And so when you come up there with your nice program and your this, that, your thing, and they're like, man, come on, you going soft. You know, that's another strategy. You know, the art of war says that. You know, send somebody in the enemy camp. Get him out there to expose himself. You know, make him strike before he's ready. You know, we're ready right now. Yeah. No, we're not ready. We need to stock up more supplies. No, no, we got them right now. You know, you're a coward. You want to know. Let's march right now. That's a strategy of infiltration to get you out there to do something before you're ready to do it.
That's key. Mm-hmm. What that brother's saying. That brother is really on point. This brother is really on point. You one of the few brothers that I heard is on point when it comes to intel on the intelligence level. You know, you really, really on point with that.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, most definitely.
I study military tactics. You know, from different wars in history. And that's been done ever since Roman times. You know, Romans that infiltrate the thing, and make people okay. Let's go over to the side of the mountain over here. That's where they're gonna attack. You know,
exactly.
And then Rome will be waiting.
Exactly.
They'll be waiting for them. You know,
exactly.
So you gotta be careful about people coming in there. Not saying you want everybody to be docile, but when somebody comes in and out of nowhere, he's just basically taking. Drowning everybody else out, this, that, your thing, and you know your plan. You know, because the people chose me, that you have a real plan, and you're the real leader, and you got the vision and everything, and somebody comes in there and tries to question your credibility and stuff like that. That's how they destroy organizations. So it forces you to adopt his ideology to win the crowd back. So it takes you both off the thing. That's the oldest, one of the oldest tactics of military. You know, Sun Tzu mastered that. He said, the best battle is the one never fought.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? And that's why you really need to. Once you see that intelligence, the book we got, that's one of the things that's spoken on in there, on how they run these games. And it's like it's hard for if you're not in tune to the tactics, if you're not in tune to it, it's so hard to to combat it, and it's so easy for people to get thrown off. You know, I used to be, just to let you know, it ain't no secret, I used to be the number four. I was the Minister of Intelligence for the New Black Panther Party. And it's like, man, I was dealing with a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And it got to the point where I said, you know, I'm going to have to get his position up because, first of all, the leadership of the New Black Panther Party was not listening to me. I was telling them, look, man, this is a outright nightmare. We don't even have the process, the entrance process correctly. You know, we didn't have no kind of entrance process in there, and they still don't. I'm thinking all these years maybe it's done changed. This was, we talking from 2001.
I tried to talk to those brothers, and I had them on my show for 5 hours one night. I think Rob was using it at night. 5 hours one night. We had double shows. I still can't get through them, you know. And
Here's the problem. It's what I described in another book, Crash Course. It's what I described as a perpetual state of infantile leftism. Now,
yes. That's
some of those words I kind of, you know, made up, you know, or leftism, because, you know, it's not necessarily a term is leftism, but it is now because I made it. So it's like, you know, it's a perpetual state. What that means is they don't even have a mechanism in place to correct incorrectness because they have a leadership that's basically, he's the leader and that's it. I'm talking about Malik Zul Shabazz. He's the leader and that's it. So whatever fucked up, incorrect shit that he own, that's what we own too. You know what I'm saying? And it's like he don't have nothing to check him. First of all, in a real party, you're supposed to have elections every so often. You know, it's
right.
And that way, you know, even the goddamn Vatican understand this shit. They don't allow a priest to be at one particular parish for too long because they don't want the people looking at the priest, okay? They want them to stay focused on, you know, whatever it is they want to stay focused on. But,
except for Father,
which is kind of suspicious. But anyway, you know, it's like, you know, they don't even do that shit. You know what I'm saying? But here we are where we'll have a leader, and he's just a leader, and that's just it. Like, what the fuck is that about?
And,
like,
you know,
how stupid is that? Like, you know, do we not understand? And I told Malik this. I said, Malik, when do we plan on having elections? Because I said, you can't just be the chairman forever. And he said,
right.
You know what he told me? He said, that's what black people want. I said, no, brother. You know, a lot of times black people don't necessarily want this. This is what we think we want. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And what we really need is a democratic system. I don't, you know, we need a system.
You need accountability.
Exactly.
In other words, you get up and say something, right? And you get up and I say like this. This is what I told him, brother. I said, look, okay. And I told him, I said, look, when I had him on my show, I told the one, the spokesman, well, Sean Quali, whatever his name is. I said, look, man, the problem I have with, he said, well, what's the problem you have with us? Well, I said, well, I don't have really a problem with you. I just had a thing where it's that you guys spend too much time in the white media, you know? And the whole thing is I'm feeling that, you know, that the white media is blowing you guys way out of order. The people that are joining the organization is fine. And a lot of people that join the organization don't really have any sort of thing. All they know is they hate white people. You know, that's it. They hate white people, kill crackers. And they'll say, what happens is this.
And then they ain't even about that.
White people will do like this is what white people do. And they're so dirty. You know, white people are so dirty. They'll have them on as this. White people love to have is the black equivalent of the neo-Nazis and Ku Klux Klan. Okay?
Exactly.
And you know, and I know, and everybody know, there's never going to be, you can never have that because you don't have, the neo-Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan are part of the white establishment. They're protectors of the white power structure. You don't have any black power structure. No black people have any power over white people's wealth or economics and everything like that. The reason why we can't strike back at the white power structure, the neo-Nazis, is because we know deep down inside, you know, they're really talking for the majority of white people, and to do so would their lives out damnation if we do like that, because we got to go and punch the same white people's clock as we did when we did. At least we're getting paid like that. That's just the way America is. White people have the power. They're the courts. They're the judges. They can seize your assets. They can do everything they want to destroy you. So therefore, you can't play on their level like that. Now you're trying to be the black equivalent of them, and you don't have the power to back it up. You know, you don't have the power to back it up. You ain't going to see no new black family by lynch no white person, drag them down the street. Or you ain't going to see no black cop kill no white kid, you know, stuff like that. That only happens to you when you have no power. Power is powerless. We're powerless in a system. So why would you even project that? What the Muslims in the Black Panther Party originally was for self-defense. You try to attack me, I have the right to defend myself. Okay?
Exactly.
That's just natural law. And that's why the Black Panther Party in many ways is successful. Because the majority of black people say, yeah, you shouldn't be able to just roll up on us and just shoot us anytime you want. We're going to shoot you back. You know? But we don't just basically get up there and talk about, let's just start killing crack the babies and all this kind of stuff. You don't do that.
And actually, the brother's on point, but just to make a small correction, because we have to, again, as a brother stated, we always correct ourselves, even when we given historical significance. The Black Panther Party originally was established to bring about a different party outside of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party.
Right.
People. However, because of the situations with the pigs and the fact that the people was feeling the defensive mechanism of the Black Panther Party, that became the actual focus.
And that's the only thing people want to focus on in history.
Right.
That's the only thing people want to focus on in history.
And so Huey, in refining the Black Panther Party, Huey said we have to get the focus back to our original outcome, which was the socio-political establishment of the Black Panther Party and not necessarily the gun.
Let me say something here that's going to crack you all up, right? In many ways, right, in black, and this is something we have to change in ourselves, you know, black man in America, when you're powerless, right, This is why the black exploitation movies went over so well. Free the Hard Way and Black Belt Jones also. Because they know appeal to black macho machismo sells black America. That's why you think you have the Jay-Z's and all these people. They got all this money and all these women around them, stuff like that. Or you the Mac Daddy, or you the big time and everything. So therefore, our organizations, if they don't have that sort of element of I'm bad, you know, I'm ready to do some battles with crackers and everything like that. If it ain't militant or you basically like that, they feel that they can't really attract black people or the mass of black people when it's not like that. You know, if you have a real organization that have pragmatic things and everything, the militant thing is the thing to be there on the side, but that shouldn't be what you put out at front to the public.
Exactly. Well, you know
another
what?
Thing I wanted to say before the brother had got off, because definitely what the brother is talking about and what he's talking about with the peace that he's establishing, we definitely have to support these type of things. And one of the things that we always sit at the table and we tell people, the one thing we should never sit back and say is that we got to start from scratch. Or, man, how do we begin the process to do such and such? Because within the realms of our community, we have brothers like the brother on the other end. We have brothers like this brother here, speaking about the comedic piece. We have brothers and sisters who's doing what they're doing, whether it's education, like here in Chicago. You know, we got Brother Marcus Klein with the Freedom Home Academy. You know, we got others who are also doing homeschooling and having private schools and teaching our children. And so when we sit back and say, you know, man, we need to build a curriculum, how do we start to build a curriculum for our people? There's no such thing as starting to build it because we have many mechanisms already established. What we have to do is sit back and determine, organize what's already established and help expand what's established.
Consolidate and network.
Exactly.
Consolidate and network, right.
What I would say is with Brother Rob introducing us to yourself, big brother, that we consolidate this thing that we're talking about, and then we move on from that. Because that's one thing we do here in Chicago is that, you know, we sit back and we recognize what people are doing and so forth. But the hardest thing to get is to get them to consolidate, to get them to solidify themselves and truly build the mechanism that's needed. One of the things that we're pushing for is, even on the educational piece, is for those who have those educational curriculums to bring what they have to the table so that we can establish a curriculum that we can go and grab our children and help expand what's already established and help expand them into a bigger facility so that our children will not be in the Chicago public school system. We can begin to have a school built out west, a school built out south, a school built out east, institutions built in the middle, you know what I mean? And just keep it flowing and rocking. But it first has to start, first and foremost, not with finances, with support. Support.
Yeah, support.
Finance
support
don't mean a damn thing if we ain't
supporting
each other. Right.
I like what I'm hearing about support.
Finance don't mean a goddamn thing with nothing if there ain't no support behind it as a foundation.
Yep. I agree with you 100%. We have to have a support. We have to basically look at pragmatic programs. And this is what I'm saying. Well, a lot of these people that are what I call them false militants, you know, they're coming out here and they'll do a little bit of something. This is what we did. They'll have a can drive. They'll take pictures of them giving out like 20 chickens. Oh, look what we did. We did so much on it. And then they spend the rest of their time talking about, we're going to go to war and all this stuff. And we got to get that out of our head, you know, this idea that we're going to go to war and all this kind of nonsense and everything. That's not going to happen. You know, we're behind enemy lines in this country, you know. We need to build ourselves up, build our schools. You know, and basically show our people another way, how to live, you know, and love themselves again, you know, like we used to have, you know. And when we have that, we'll gain our people. Right now, our people are lost. You know, right now, people are lost, you know, for the most part. You know, you got people out there, their minds, MTV and BET and all this kind of foolishness that's out there and everything. And that's what they put that out there for. Because the world makes it seem like, oh, look, you know, you see Jay-Z and all the people with Justin Timberlake, black and white, are coming together. And if you go against that, say, oh, you're a racist. Then what I'm trying to do, and Rob knows me very well, is that basically I've been telling people for years,
You could be black and be proud of yourself and proud of your community and not basically even mention racism. Of course, that's the elephant in the room, but basically that's not what we're all about. The Jews do it. They make money with black people and everything like that, but do you think the Jews are going to give up what they have? You know, do you think the Jews are going to give up Israel? Do you think the Jews are going to give up all their organizations, institutions, and their finance and everything and just become regular? No, of course not. The Jews are going to keep being Jews and everything. They'll be out there and they'll say ah, shalom and everything, but the bottom line is that they know that their community and their institutions and their families and all stuff like that and their way of life and everything is how they sustain themselves. We're the only people that's required to give up who we are just to get along. You know, we're the only group of people that tell us we got to stop being black. You know, that our salvation relies in one day white people somehow accepting us and somehow white people, black and white people singing Kumbaya and all this kind of nonsense, right? And they had it so, and like I said on the show last night, I said they made it seem like black people who were pro-black and basically panned after them were extremists. We have to take that back. Listen to these brothers. Really, 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 really does my heart good. Because I believe, I've studied this, that the black militants, the black power people were the ones that were pragmatists back in the day. The people that were basically talking about force busting, those were the extremists. The people talking about abandoning the black community and spending all money with white people and everything and push for integration, those were the extremists. And we have to start telling people, you know, those people that want to destroy black America are the extremists. We're not the extremists. Those are the extremists and everything. And so we can't let people come in our movement and just raise all hell and everything. So the white media can basically say, see, this is what they're all about. They about nothing. They're about throwing all stuff like that. They have no plan, you know.
Well, you know what? What the brother was saying about that, you know, that's it's some evidence to support that is the CIA propaganda machine. If anybody looked, CIA started getting in Hollywood. At first, it started with CIA just hiring Hollywood. And
yeah,
then the CIA,
Ozzy Harris, they're all on the payroll.
They were hiring Hollywood. And then it got to the point where the CIA put together their own, it's right around the time when they were trying to frame they were trying to make this it was some leader over in Indonesia, I believe, they were trying to make him look.
Suharto. Exactly. The same thing. They made him, he was a nationalist, but they tried to make him seem like he was some crazy.
They were trying to make a phony porno film of him messing with a Russian agent. Okay, and they weren't satisfied with the one they hired some Hollywood people in L.A. to put together. They weren't satisfied with the film, so they went ahead and they put together their own film department, and they tried to make a film, and they just ended up, it didn't come out, so they just scrapped that particular operation, but they said, hey, this is a good idea. We need to have our own film department, so they basically had their own film department. It was a friend of my mother's that worked for Paramount Pictures in L.A., and she said that the CIA had a office in Paramount Pictures. I'm talking about with the seal on the door and everything. I mean, it's just they wasn't even trying to hide the shit back in – this was in the 80s. Now they're a little more discreet with it, how they do it. But back then, they were just kind of outright. And then also another point I want to make for you, with that, it's evidence that whole image of the extremist militant was actually created by the CIA to make us look just so off the wall. And then they always have them fucking a white girl. And no matter what, they always do that to try to take away, to try to make us look like, you know, oh, yeah, look at this black militant. And then
they fucking white girl.
These guys,
this is what they do. They say, okay, they create this black militant image, right? Oh, he's extremely pro-black. And then they'll have them messing with a white girl. See, deep down inside, did they try to do that with Nat Turner? You ever see the diary of the Professor of Nat Turner?
Yeah,
you know?
They try to say
they try to do Nat Turner. They try to say, well, the reason why he killed that girl because he deep down inside desired her and he was a slave and he turned on her and he went on a mad rage. That's the basic thing. All the time, they're basically saying, black man's just angry. All we have to do is throw him a few crumbs, give him one of our women, and he'll be satisfied, you know? Ariel Alfonso, Sidney Poitier, American white woman, whatever like that. And I'm not a racist, whatever like that. That's you like the vanilla thing. Go right ahead. Just knock yourself out. But what I'm saying is this. They're saying basically even the black militant, right? If we basically have it, throw a white woman out there, that's what you'll go to. So basically what it's telling black people is, I'm not going to follow these guys. Because deep down inside, I know they're going to be, remember that movie, what's that movie, a comedy?
I'm going to get you, sucker.
I'm going to get you, sucker. Yeah. That's it. And then the movie, Don't Be a Menace to South Central. Remember that? And they got Farrakhan D. He was talking about stuff. Then he was like, completely sold like went like that. They always try to do the thing where they're trying to discredit militants, you know, and make us seem like crazy buffoons. And then what happens is this. The young person says, now, man, I ain't going to be no Farrakhan D. Negro. Man, come on, man. I'm listening to 50 Cent, what he got to say, you know. I'm down with N.W.A. It's all psychological warfare they wage on them. That's why when we come out, we have to be sound like we're professional, we're business, we're normal, just like anybody
strategic.
Else, right? Strategic, you know? And when we're like that, we're not going to flop the handle every little thing. Oh, you blah, blah, blah. That's why I said I don't get all this flying off the handle and everything. Because as soon as they made it, now this is the time to get angry and I raise my voice and everything. But most of it all, I can sit down and talk about anything. I can sit down and talk about sports. And I can sit down and talk about the weather. I can give you an objective opinion on what's going on in the Middle East. Okay, I'm not going to always go, Why? Because that's what they want you. They want to put you in some little box where you're just sitting there in a huddle, angry all the time. No, but then you say like this. On the whole, what's your ultimate philosophy? I believe in all things considered, everything that I look at in American history, it would have been better if black people had their own independent nation, being able to govern themselves. We would be probably one of the richest countries right now. We'd probably be the ones building the cars and probing space right now. Malcolm X said, you know. But because we're in your civilization, I say yes. We're a civilization. We're at the bottom of your civilization, and we're just trying to survive in a white man's world. No, it's not a white man's world. No. No, yes, it is. It's still a white man's world. All we do is basically play the role. Black people, we play the role. We tap dance to earn that paycheck, and so you don't beat us over the head with a nightstick. You know, that's all it is when it really comes down to. You know, it's still a white country. And the issues of slavery and everything have never been resolved.
Well, Dr. Huey P. Newton, he really, really laid it out for us. What he said was, it was a interviewer, a reporter asked him, so is the Black Panther Party the Black Army or something? He said, no, we're not a Black Army. He said, we are anything we need to be within a particular time for a particular reason. And he was saying that nothing in itself is revolutionary. And nothing in itself is revolutionary. Things are only revolutionary within their context. So
right.
it may be revolutionary for me to disguise myself as a Crip or Blood or a street cat to go and be able to and go and talk to them once and be more receptive to. It may be revolutionary for me to wear a suit and a tie and walk around
It may be revolutionary, very revolutionary, just to become the rough of public office. And then you're basically behind the scenes, you're basically making sure black people are getting taken care of, you know?
Whatever we need to do, everything. And these tactics, see, our enemy has no, they have no qualms about doing any of these things we speak of. They have no problem doing it.
The white man will sit down with the Eskimo. They'll go up there, the Eskimo. You see them? They'll go to the deepest reaches of the Congo.
Oh, man, they'll go to the Congo. Yeah.
They'll sit there. You say there's bullets flying all over the place, and all they need is a handshake and agreement. And next thing you know, mission accomplished. We don't do that. We take some big plans of it. It's basically doing what you have to do, you know, blending in, doing what you have to do to make sure that you turn the right keys and open the right doors and get mission accomplished. Doing what you have to do, you know. It ain't about pumping your fist up, screaming black power and all that. That's not revolutionary.
Look at the rise of CIA agents. that are converting to Islam. I'm talking about wearing the, all of the stuff, and I mean praying and all of that.
Oh,
they
doing what they gotta
infiltrating.
Do.
I mean, actually, so I mean, it's like you look at this shit, you're like, wow, you know. And it's like, what level are we on? You know what I'm saying? You know, well, we trying to have a revolution on our own terms. We trying to force a square into a circle block.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
We haven't got to that level yet. We think
we're gonna have this fantasy revolution where we all wearing black uniforms and looking, you know what I'm saying, with a black glove.
Brother, I didn't want to say it like that, but what's happening is brothers are looking, don't know how they're looking like clowns right about now. You know, we're this close to being laughed off the stage, and I'm not rolling with nobody. One thing I don't like is being laughed at. I don't mind being feared or whatever like that. But the bottom line is, if you're gonna laugh at me, the laugh is gonna be on you in the end. But I'm not gonna be followed by blindly where I know they're going down the path that's gonna lead to absolutely nowhere. You know,
and that's why I kind of admired the. I saw where they were trying to go with the whole revolutionary but gangster movement. Where, you know, like I don't know how that played out on the East Coast, but I know on the West Coast. It was real effective as far as getting your average Joe brother that's just gangbanging to get them involved into the revolution. You know,
yeah, whatever you have to do.
It was like, man, you know, here you had some cats that, you know what I'm saying, they rocking the Chuck Taylors and, you know what I'm saying, and rocking the bandanas and stuff and you know what I'm saying, with the you know, with the khakis and shit. Like LA, you know, that's the style out there in LA, you know. And they were rocking that shit, and they were, you know, you look, you run across one, you be like, oh man, is this nigga a Crip? Is he a Blood? And you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And then the whole time, these cats is, you know what I'm saying? These cats is, you know, rocking the whole revolutionary but gangster movement. Like, we rep, you know, we rocking for Africa. And you be like, what? Oh, wow. Okay. All right. And if you're a cat that's into that shit, if you're a cat that's deeply entrenched in the gang culture or street tribe culture, as we would call it, if you're a cat that's really into that, you see these dudes, and you see these dudes, you know what I'm saying, they out in the front of the yards lifting the weights, just like, the, you know what I'm saying, the Crips or the Bloods do, you know what I'm saying, they out there, you know what I'm saying, they out there boxing, and they, you know what I'm saying, they basically doing the same activities that the Crips and Bloods do. If you're a Crip or Blood, you'd be like, oh, man, I want to fuck with them. And they bout it, and you know what I'm saying, the way they move, the way they act. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I was real effective. And we need to do that on every level. We need to do that on a corporate level. We need to do that on a political level. We need to do that on every level. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I believe in black men. We might need to disguise
a sister, a brother, you know, have them come look like a Justin Timberlake or Miguel or one of these, whatever these little dudes or whatever into now. You know what I'm saying? We might need to have somebody disguise and go into that world. We might need to have somebody, a sister.
That's what white people do. You don't know their belief or ideology. They'll sit down and have dinner with you and everything. And you never know who they're connected with, their beliefs are, until one day they reveal themselves and say, I didn't know you thought like that. You know?
And you know what? In 1994, on Maury Povich's show, the Tom Metzger was on there with his son. These were the leaders of the Aryan movement.
I remember that. He was like, we let our hair grow and we blend it into society. You know, that's what he said.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember Tom at one point in time. Tom was talking about. He was saying that they tell their members it's okay to blend in and it's okay to have your black friends and you know what I'm saying and your black girlfriends and boyfriends. Because you're right where you need to be when the time comes. You see what I'm saying? And he was like, man, niggas so fucking stupid. You can buy them a couple of beers and listen to rap, and they think you their best friend. And that's some scary shit when you think about it like that.
Yeah,
so
because you don't know where they are. I'm seeing that a lot. I'm seeing where I live at. I see people wearing rebel flags and all stuff like that, and they're bumping hip hop in their car. I don't know what to think. You know, really, I see that. I don't know what to think.
I was down in Tennessee. I got about five more minutes.
How you doing, brother?
Okay, I'll say this real quick. I was down in Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee. It was this cat always ride around in one of those Bigfoot, like monster trucks with a Confederate flag. But every time you see him, he always playing 3-6 Mafia. All
yep, they love that. Everybody knows that
this dude is Klan. So one time I see him in Walgreens, and I asked him, I said, hey, man, I see you with your little shit, your Klan shit, you know, AK-47 in the window. I'm like, yeah, I know you Klan and all. I'm like, so you kind of, it's kind of confusing to me because every time I see you, you know, you playing 3-6 Mafia or Ghetto Boys. That's the other shit he would play. And I was like, that's all I hear you playing. And you know what he told me? And I wanted to get mad at him, but I couldn't because he told me the truth where the other ones would lie to me. He said, well, hell, all they talk about is killing niggas. And I was like, whoa.
Yep. They love that stuff. Well, we can find most of the thing. Black people talk about killing each other, or East Coast killing West Coast, or you come to my neighbor, I'm going to kill you or not. They love that. You love the entertainment.
They love that shit.
Hold on, brothers. I ain't got that much time left. I want to go ahead and Brother Caleb.
Yo.
I want you to go ahead and give some information about the...
I put in the chat room the links to the Comedic Pipeline and the Black Wall Street. These are two groups, and go to the community group and just sign up and become a member of the community group. You want to join the Spiral Funding Program and in your organization or whatever like that, if you get basically $10 a month, and then what happens is when you join, you qualify to be in the pool to get your business funded just by joining. $10 a month just by joining. But I would urge people, if you want to join, get your organization involved, right? Come up with a real plan and work with Devon Bell and Jonathan Sinclair and basically put together a real plan. Because like I said, the funding will be there. Okay, that's all I can tell you. The funding will be there. We're looking at things to fund black businesses and everything. But black businesses trading with other black businesses and everything, and funding other black, supporting other black businesses and everything, giving you business training. So I will urge you to do that. The Black Wall Street Plan, uniting black businesses under common, well, we're buying together, financing each other, trading together, and supporting each other on a global scale is revolutionary. You know, our own monetary system one day and our own currency. You know, that's what we're moving towards. You know, so we're moving to the big time. You know, we have hopes that the Honest Stock Exchange in 10 years will be at the size of the NASDAQ is. You know, because we have companies listed and everything from all kinds of logistics, petrochemicals, you name it, agriculture industries and everything. So we're going to be working with different African countries and everything. So this is monumental. You know, we're going to basically be able to trade back and forth with the African continent and everything. Can you imagine our farmers being having a market to ship their products to? Don't have to worry about prices in the U.S. We have a ready-made market on the African continent and vice versa. Mm-hmm. These are things that we can do with our own exchanges and everything. But, you know, these are the things our leaders in the last generation should have left us with. But, you know, we are not going to cry over that. But now is the time to really to do that. You know, and the only thing that can stop us is us. Okay?
No
doubt. So, like I said, we have the internet now. Like Rob and I, we don't agree on everything. Well, you think somebody could tell me, you know, call Rob and say, you know, all I do is pick up the phone and Rob, you know, what's going on, blah, blah, I didn't like that, whatever. That's all that takes. Back in the day, the Panthers all didn't have that. They could easily send out letters, or he wrote this and things like that. They can't do that with us these days, you know, because we're in communication with each other, you know. So the only thing that's really going to stop us is us, you know. The only thing that's going to stop us is our unity and everything like that, and what we're building for ourselves, it's going to work. You know, all we have to do is stay in contact with each other and communicate. You know.
Hey, Brother Kayla, I'll be going ahead. I didn't send in nothing yet. I'll be doing that this week. Okay, probably tomorrow after I go ahead and get out in the streets or something like that. I don't know. But I'm going to go to that. I just got a text from somebody talking about going to the Marcus Garvey Festival. Brother Jakari, Brother Fakan.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is 73rd Maryland. Hey, I'm going to be there, but I want either one of you guys, you take turns. I want you to chime in and talk about the National Solidarity Movement and also National Solidarity Committee. And also, you know, I'm gonna have to talk to you guys in person tomorrow. Then I'm gonna get back to you, Brother Kayla, because I see some way we can go ahead and come together with something and do something here.
Right. We need.
All right, good talking to you. I'm gonna let you guys. I'm gonna get off the phone right now. And Rob, you know how to get in touch with me and everything like that. We'll be talking more. All right. You brothers, man, have a good night.
All right. Right on, brother. Right on.
All right.
Yes, sir. You wanna go first, Brother Fakan? Where did brother go? Hello?
Brother Fakan, his line's still open. Where you go here?
Well, basically, as far as National Solidarity Committee, if anybody out there want to get involved, any organization want to get involved. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm still low.
Any organization that want to get involved with the National Solidarity Committee, definitely do so. Brother Rob, you got the information where they're going to have it? Is it typed on the screen where they can see it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, definitely email NSC_Uhuru. That's NSC_UHURU@live.com. Definitely send us an email that you want some documentation on the NSC. Also, you can call 708-473-2315 on the National Solidarity Committee, and the brother could drop a line as it relates to Black Panther Party and more information.
And also the website, the Black Panther Party website is therealbpp.com. That's THEBPP, THEREALBPP.com, therealbpp.com. So, yeah, brothers and sisters that want to get involved, they can. Definitely, brother, this has been a pleasure. We're going to keep this going because this is our media. This is, every revolution has to have media. And if you don't have a media, you really can't have a revolution without having a media, because that's how you get the message out to people.
Exactly.
So
what I want to do, man, is I want to go ahead and move that time up. I don't want to go at 9 o'clock, try to go 9 o'clock at least 6 nights a week till I get somebody to take over for that 7th night. I got another brother I want to bring on. I'm going to see if we can go ahead. We should be on tomorrow, and I'm trying to get these two other brothers to come on. And this other brother I love, he do a lot of spoken word rap music, and I want to go ahead and bring him on tomorrow if I can. And then I'm also in contact with two other individuals that I would like to go ahead and see them. Go ahead. I want you guys to listen to them. But tomorrow, this Marcus Garvey parade / festival, you brothers plan on being near that?
Now, which one? Because it's...
That's with Brother Sax Preacher.
Yeah, Sax Preacher. Okay.
Temple of Mercy.
There's going to be a 73rd Maryland tomorrow. So I was... That cat got my number. You should have called me. Okay. I'm going to be there. It's like from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., and I'm going to be there tomorrow. So, with that, brothers, I'm glad you guys showed up. This is Chef Rob Show. We're going to be here tomorrow night, 9 p.m., and I hope everybody can go ahead and make it. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're
my brother. Love you. God bless you.
See my mama buying her baby cousin on the Sunday. It was the same to do with these four from the rain. Oh, I see it every day, right before my eyes. Another road boy gets saved from another gunplay. And it's the system that she provides, the slaying of so much life. But still, stiff naked fools wanna go their way. There is some rude boys hanging in the alley. And if you pass, tell me, say you're lucky. The trigger happy wanna prove him skills. Taking him Joe Quick, they kill. Gangsters are living high, like they wanna touch the sky. And they don't care if another man leave or another man die.
Like a sister close, I know anyone.